Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Somebody call David, 8183, tell him the tornado's right over his house.
Yeah, I seen that.
This thing is massive. Oh my God. I was waiting for that microwave tower to go. Never did. Plug it into a plug-in.
Where?
Anywhere, right? First plug-in you see. You want that on tape?
Oh.
It is. Oh my God, they're losing shingles now.
What's where to go?
It's right there.
Morgan,
yeah, Morgan, get downstairs.
It's okay.
A man, is it the power in his hands? Is it his quest for glory? Give it all you got to fight to the top, so we can know your story. Man, is it the woman in his arms? Just cause she has big titties? Or is it the way he fights every day? No, it's probably the titties. Now you're a man.
Hello, it is 29 minutes after the hour of 1, and this the month of March, in the year of our Lord, 2011. Think of a drawing near that ye might be amused and informed on this Friday. It is Friday, and welcome to Day 12. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program, broadcasting to you live from high above the Milkpacking District here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Alongside me is Don Taylor. Hello, Don Taylor.
Hi, Rick Emerson.
How are you on this Friday?
I'm
fine. A little tired, but good.
What have you got to be tired about? You just opened a brand new can of Visa over there. The lifeblood of caffeine is flowing through your veins.
This is the same one I've been drinking since I started this morning.
Oh.
And look, it's all dented up.
Oh, that's me that just opened a brand new can of Visa.
Yes.
Hold on a second.
I only have like an inch left in mine.
Hold on a second. Pardon me while I take it. Ooh, I'm sorry. I got to put the can down for a second. It's too cold. It's all caked with frost and ice on the outside. Wait a second.
You're a bad person.
They pour some of it into this cup over these brand new fresh clean ice cubes, which I've just removed from that totally useless silicone IKEA ice cube tray. Hold on. Ah, there we go. All right. I knew that one of us had a Visa. Awesome. It's 503-505-6964 if you would like to join us today. 503-505-6964 with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings about the nature of Mecha Godzilla or whatever it is that you... And no, I did not... No, I did not play Godzilla by the Blue Oyster Cult during the two shows. Despite, I swear to God, like 5 dozen requests that I do so. That's a thing.
Yeah, no.
Rick Emerson doesn't traffic in that kind of humor. It's enough that I play the tornado vomit thing, which, by the way, I could play every single day and never grow tired of. And then I was just now checking my email, and it actually said, let's see, this is from listener Nick. I didn't even see this when I played the, tornado vomit sounder just now. Nick says, the subject under this email, all caps, and then he does the thing of alternating exclamation marks and question marks. He says, where's the barf? I'd like to hear the barf sound clip with my tornado stories. Thank you very much. Hook a brother up. Because I think we had a tornado. Did we have some sort of story about Tornado Alley during Legion of News?
Yeah, in Kansas. Yeah, I don't...
So I think he believes that any reference to or discussion of tornadoes should be accompanied by the barfing sound. Which, don't get me wrong, I agree with you, sir. Mm. It's just not a thing I always think to do.
I don't like listening to barfing sounds.
Yes, you do. Everyone does.
No, I really don't.
You
and
do.
I don't like seeing people barfing in movies or in television shows.
You picked the wrong program on which to work, Don. There's just no way to get around that fact. That is a... You've chosen poorly, so I won't play that several more times before the end of today's show.
I truck with pretty much every other thing that this show stands for.
Every other kind of
the barfing sounds I can live with that.
All right. Well, I'll just put this other folder of sound effects away. Then I guess I won't be needing these much. It is Friday, March 11th, 2011. Thank you for joining us. If you want to get in touch via the phone, you can do it. It's 503-505-6964. I mentioned last hour during Legion of News that I emailed our listener Michael in Seaside yesterday, last night when they were doing the whole thing of the evacuation, and he was talking about how packing up his stuff and kind of getting out of town just because the house is going to be destroyed, but because they were going to be dealing with some flooding. I also sent an email to our listener, Reven, who lives in Japan, where he teaches English as a second language to Japanese students. And he said that he was actually fine. He himself that had a few tremors and shakes. He was actually far from the point of impact for the epicenter, the ground zero. So I've checked on like the 3 people I know in Japan. So I mean, really, just like for me, I could just sort of check that off. There's nobody personally that I need to worry about at this juncture.
I don't think I know anyone in Japan.
See, so. I'm just saying. So you
other than Reven, who I now know,
you and I can at least, if there's any small, silver lining here, you and I can put our personal worries and concerns to bed.
I still found myself really unusually upset by it when I was watching it on the news this morning, and usually stuff like that. It's part of my whole belief system that I think at heart I am dangerously close to being, some kind of like a sociopath. Because I just really don't care very much about other people's problems.
I think that just makes you the average American.
But I was watching that, and I was watching just the flooding and the devastation from the earthquake and that overhead shot, with the from a plane.
The burning buildings in the tsunami.
Of stuff just taking everything over. And I found myself I was welling up with tears. I was getting really upset about it. And that's unusual for me, because usually, like most good Americans, I just go, well, it doesn't affect me. What do I care?
Maybe Friends is on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the thing I was watching last night, and again, it was that shot that everybody talks about where you just saw the ships and the boats and the cars and the everything and the fire, and it's all just sort of careening across what was fortunately farmland. So it's not like it was without incident or loss of life, but I mean, it could have been a lot worse. But you're watching that come along, I think the thing that makes it so unnerving for people is you just realize As I have remarked many times, whenever we have some, some story about the environment or about, you know, global warming or whatever, you just realize how much the Earth just doesn't care about us one way or the other, and how little we can do to affect anything. The idea that man somehow controls or ruins or destroys nature, man wasn't ruining a damn thing last night. That was all nature. I don't cotton much to bumper stickers, because bumper stickers are they're not usually funny, and even if they are, it's like somebody else's borrowed wit. It's like some jackass who can't themselves be funny or interesting, and so they pay $1.98 to get the wit of some guy at the Hallmark factory who just sits there and just cranks out, you know, "Don't laugh, it's paid for." And they just, you know, then they print it and just stick it at every truck stop across the Midwest. So I'm not a big fan of most things that you see on the... God damn, I saw this bumper sticker the other day. Just makes me tired even to think about it. I don't want to go into a whole thing. But it was... I guess it was like the flare that what's-her-name wears in Office Space. It was a bumper sticker that just said, we're not in Kansas anymore. And it was like, I so badly... Normally, I just want to pummel people like that. Normally, I just want to beat them into some sort of a fine powder. But it wasn't even that. It was like, I so badly wanted to chase the car down and just pull them over and just get the person out of the car and just ask them what that meant. Like, to them. Not in the abstract. Like, what did it mean in the movie? Why is that on your car? A bumper sticker that says we're not in Kansas anymore. Were you laboring under the illusion that other people had the misapprehension of their location relative to Kansas, and so you wanted to clarify that in the most energy efficient way possible by conveying information about your location relative to Kansas on the back of your car? What is the reason that goes on there?
Well, I believe, first of all, it is a Wizard of Oz reference. And then, you know.
I know that, but I'm saying, why would you put it on your car?
It's
You don't listen to me when I talk, Don.
I do, but I'm saying that it's a...
Like, I know it's a Wizard of Oz reference, but why is it on your car?
Because I believe the person is just sort of making some sort of a statement about the wacky nature of the world around them.
Do you really believe that's true?
I really do. I don't think they're
doing
a very good job of it.
Do they have some existentialist view of the world that they feel is best conveyed by a bumper sticker they got at a Gas and Go?
It's a way of saying, wow, look around, things are wacky. I'm not saying that it's the
You're
way...
You're giving somebody far too much credit.
I would express that. Well, and also keep in mind, I spent a good, like, probably 15 years, and I used to see those things that said, gas, grass, or ass, nobody rides for free. And I thought that...
At least that's informative.
But I thought that that was conceptual as well. I thought that that was philosophical. I thought basically what it meant was, whether you do drugs, whether you have a sexual relationship, or drive a car... There are consequences to everything. No one in this life rides for free. And then one day it just finally occurred to me, it means that you got to pay for stuff. That's all it means.
This is why you have a difficult time, I think, holding jobs in regular media. you're putting your brain in way too high a gear for the average American boob.
There was also that Jackson Brown song. And he's saying, nobody rides for free. Nobody, nobody. And in that case... It was philosophical, and I heard that song, I believe, before I ever saw the gas, grass, or ass license plate frame. So therefore, in my mind, I thought it was sort of a philosophical statement.
Okay. I so badly regret bringing this entire thing up. Somebody emails right away, and they say, how many of the radio shows would have listeners... On how many of the radio shows would the listeners have the host emailing to check on them during natural disasters? That's your it's worth your 32 cents a day right there. Well, look.
We care.
I'm just saying, because then otherwise I got to go over to Japan and I got to find some other guy to start giving me 32 cents a day. And that's going to be a tricky proposition as of now, and it would make me look like a jackass. So it's a lot easier for me to just, to maintain the 32 cents coming in from Japan now. Because think of the cost involved to go find another 32 cents a day. I mean, especially now. I mean, granted, you may be able to get some airfare specials at this point, but it's not like,
Plus, we're counting on him to basically evangelize and spread the word of the Emerson Show
in two languages.
In Japan.
That's right. And I just say, it seems like a lot of the 32 cents a day stipends that I might otherwise be able to wrangle, that's going to be spoken for, I would imagine, maybe a few months. So, I just got to,
He teaches English as a second language. He should recommend that his students... subscribe to our broadcast.
To learn colloquialisms.
Exactly. As a learning opportunity, to learn how real Americans talk about stuff.
I like the cut of your jib. See right there, you've made up for the whole bumper sticker debacle. And we could, not that I would ever offer this, because it seems like this might be sort of inappropriate. This might be a violation of some sort of honor code somewhere. But we could then cut him in for a slice of the action, depending on how many of his students sign up.
Yeah.
Because it's not like it wouldn't be easy to track. You know, you just see somebody signing up from Kyoto, and it's like, you know,
and again,
bam.
You know, $6.99 a month, it's cheaper than buying a textbook.
That's really, and it's like, this is better than anything you're going to learn in any school. I mean, really, this is the only education anybody really needs, is this fine program right here. This is the school of the streets, Don, of real life.
And then later he can get together with them and he can quiz them on what they learned from the penis watch.
And they can say, rectum, his life was nearly ended by that man. Or something, or whatever.
You got a whole bunch of Japanese people just walking around going, I hardly knew her, and not knowing what it means.
In some sort of a strange, like, Swedish accent for some reason.
That's the only accent I do.
It is Rick at RickEmerson.com. If you would like to email us today, that's Rick at RickEmerson.com. You can also email Don Taylor, that is Don, D-A-W-N, at RickEmerson.com. Don at RickEmerson.com. Text box on the website is open. You can also message via Skype if you like. That is Rick Emerson Show. That is all one word. That is our username, Rick Emerson Show, via Skype. And this is all true. Coming up later on today, Mr. Eddie Izzard will be the subject of Big Jim Willig's Humor Me Comedy 101 today. So we'll have Big Jim Willig in the studio later on talking about Mr. Eddie Izzard. And that'll be Humor Me Comedy 101. Also, Taser Watch, Clown Watch coming up later on today. We've also got clue number 5 for the EH Vending Name That Snack contest. We'll get to that later on. That is clue number 5, plus Don Taylor tracking the following headlines for you on this Friday.
Well, we will have more on the earthquake in Japan. Also have stories on a woman who goes to court with a tiny monkey stuck in her bra. And police finding a fellow with cocaine in his butt.
In the pants or in the actual ass?
Inside his ass.
It was an intra-ass delivery of cocaine.
Yes.
Really?
He was storing the cocaine in his bum.
Or is it inside a plastic bag at least? I guess we'll have to wait to find out.
Wait to find out. I don't want to give all the goodness away right now.
Pretty people don't give it away, Don. That's right. You make them work for it. So if you would like to engage with us on any or all of those subjects, or, you know, whatever it might be on your mind this fine Friday. I don't know. I got a whole... Maybe it's because I'm short-timing it, but I don't think so. Because I don't feel like I'm... Because, you know, I'm going to be gone next week, and then so next week we're going to do is for Legion of News. You'll be doing this. You'll be doing Legion of News with a variety of co-hosts, rotating a rotating passel of folks who are in sharing their thoughts and wisdom and knowledge with you.
Also, I believe I may be taking on an intern to help me get through the next couple of weeks.
Excellent.
It's actually I think it's going to be that fellow that applied to us before, and he sent me an email. I mentioned on the Twitter and on Facebook that I think I need an intern, and then he wrote to me again, so I believe I'm going to get back to him.
Do you just mean kept man?
I mean, I mean unpaid.
Gentleman friend.
Unpaid slave.
Suitor.
Basically.
Unpaid slave is redundant, I think, but...
Yeah. Just a minion, an unpaid minion.
A lackey.
Because I realized these things that we have... I'm going to be doing this kind of on my own with rotating people next week, and then the week after that... we'll be talking about this later, but we've got some other stuff coming up a couple weeks from now.
Do we?
Yes, we do, that we talked about last night. And anyway...
Oh, that's right.
And that's going to be kind of a logistical nightmare for a couple of days. I realized I need a guy. I need a person to just, like, help me do some things.
See what an idiot I am. Just after we got off the air yesterday, we were talking about all the stuff that's coming up in the next few weeks, some of which will be discussed, some of which we're talking about today in terms of, like, I'm going to be gone next week, and then some of which we won't talk about until, you know, there's too much of it to just dive into right now. Nothing strange or traumatic or scarring, but just, you know, there's a lot of stuff coming down the pipe.
Good things, really, but busy things.
We just talked about it, like, 12 hours ago or something, and you had to mouth it at me as though I were an idiot. In fact, I think that, like, if there was a sort of pop-up video version of this, it would just say, like, you know, you goddamned moron
I mouthed at you sentence. While doing that exasperated thing with my eyebrows.
Come on! Anyway, so it is, you know, I just got somebody else that Facebooked me last night, a woman asking to be an intern for the show. So, I mean, just gonna put those in a big pile. I just gotta stick those in a big. Yeah. I gotta get a big inbox for people that wish to people that wish to come be interns on this program. It's just one of those things we have not gotten to. So next week, Legion of News will be live with Don Taylor and a series of co-hosts, and then for this Rick Emerson Radio program, we'll probably do some combination of live broadcast and then stuff in the archives as well, because I'll be able to update some of that from New York, and probably. I mean, depending on what each day holds, I will probably be able to Skype in from somewhere in the York that is new. I may just actually call the show at some point to let you know that my life is being threatened by somebody at this Bates Motel place that my wife has stuck me in. So, something you'd like to share with the class?
No, I was just I had pulled up this email from the guy about the internship. And he's the fellow who said that he's been working in this one field for a number of years now, but it's time for a new direction.
Okay.
And I was reading that over and trying to get any kind of inkling that he said it ironically or not.
Well, you know, does it really matter? It seems like either way that works out for you.
Yeah.
Either he's gullible or he wants to sex you. So, well, I mean, really.
He also said, I may ask a lot of questions, but I will never question what I am told to do.
That's right. There you go.
That's what Mama likes to hear.
You're gonna have a long, prosperous career, my friend. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. Again, you can email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Don't forget, coming up this Sunday, it'll be this Sunday. That'll be at a Sleep Country, Big Al's in Beaverton, the Sleep Country Foster Kids Pajama Bowl for 2011. It's coming up this Sunday at 11 a.m. You can find out more by going to rickemersonshow.com. That is rickemersonshow.com. And I have not, I will do so right now. I haven't checked in to see where we are donation-wise. You know, when we left Legion of News, we were at a little over $1,000. I believe we had $1,010 that had been donated. I don't know where what's his name? Is it the guy? He talks about Star Wars. Glasses.
Gleek. That little Hispanic fellow that comes in here occasionally.
The little brown man who discusses aliens. Where is he? Bring him to me. The Aaron Durant's Geek in the City team, they were at, I don't know, they raised like $12 or something. So, we are at $1,010 for the Emerson News Network. That is where we're at donation-wise for Sleep Country's Foster Kids Pajama Bowl coming up this Sunday, the 13th, at Big Al's in Beaverton.
Did you kick your donation
I did
yet?
Indeed.
So did I. So that's part of why we're
excellent.
We're up there.
So together we have, the thing is, we're not just flogging other people, to sort of, to kick over some cash to children, although really you shouldn't need to be coerced or forced or cajoled into doing that. Really, it's something that is not only for children but for Rick and Dawn simultaneously. How many times do you get a chance to simultaneously do something for us and for kids? Like, never. This is the only chance. So I mean, really, this is
I had this thing last night. I was looking at this it was this morning when I was putting in my donation. And I looked to see where we stood, because we're number 3 overall in donations.
That's right, Don.
And so I looked at the number 1 group, and I thought, maybe I'll talk to Rick, and we could make like a little corporate donation from Emerson News Network, if that would kick us over the top, if that would get us like into the number 1 spot. And the thing is, though, that we have $1,000 in donation. The number 1 slot has over $1,900 in donations.
Did you say most of that is from one guy?
Yeah, and like 1,100 of it or something is from one person on the bowling team. So I'm thinking, well, that's not right.
No.
But yeah, there's no way that we could kick in enough money to put us over the top there.
Is this reverse psychology you're doing right now?
Not between you and I.
No.
But no, we could still get some more donations from some listeners and get closer to the goal. Plus, then that's only part of it. The donations are only part of it. Then you also get points for your team bowling really well and coming in with the bowling stats, and for all wearing like team uniform costumey things. And we have team uniforms.
We do.
We'll get those points. So, I think we're going to do very well.
We're going to make a strong showing, is what you're saying. We really are. This is, and by the way, anybody asking why I am not going to be bowling or why like you're not going to be bowling, it's because we'd like to win.
Yeah.
It's because we would like to come out on top. And really, I got to say, just based on Jenny's performance alone a couple years ago, where she bowled like a 270 or just something insane. I mean, and everybody else on the team is at least a good bowler. I myself am not, and I always end up wrenching out one of my vertebrae. So.
Yeah, I used to be a good bowler, but now I'm crippled, and it kind of throws you off when you're all.
That would put a bit of a. Uh, bit of a hitch in things,
wouldn't
you?
Yeah, I actually have tried to bowl since I got the knee problem. And the thing is, when you have like a weird limp and stuff, you can't really get that momentum going down the lane to really swing the ball.
You know, here's the thing, is that okay, we've got a little bit of an update here. It's not so much in terms of the amount of donation, but Cheryl is clarifying that we are... And she put up a vomiting emoticon. Thank you so much. She says, still at $1,010. She said, we are actually very close to being second, though.
Oh.
So I don't know what the actual amount for second place is. She says, we are very close to being second. Aaron is at... Aaron's at a smaller amount.
Yeah.
I'll just say that.
They're doing very well, though. But, yeah, they are considerably behind us at this point.
Also, Aaron has accused us of being racist because he says, where are your bowlers of color, sir? I ask, where are your bowlers of color? We'll use a series of multicolored balls. How about that? We'll have a whole rainbow of bowling spheres we use for the actual competition.
And during the game, we'll call Jenny Juan.
Exactly.
We'll call one of the other guys Luigi.
I swear to God, this isn't related to the Sleep Country Foster Kids Pajama Bowl. But you just triggered a whole series of thoughts in my head. I apologize for how inappropriate this sounds. Did you see that photograph of Ava Braun in blackface?
I did.
That just came out yesterday on the news. I don't want to explain the whole thought process that got me from bowling to that, but yeah. I'm just going to say that was a thing I never thought I would live in my life. Hitler's girlfriend dressed up as Al Jolson.
Yeah.
That's the thing when you wake up in the morning, you don't really think you're going to see that by the end of the day. So I'm looking at the team ranking here for the Sleep Country Pajama Bowl. So there's a... K-J-O-P, K-P-P-J-O.
Well, it's the K-P-J's, because they're wearing pajamas, so they're the K-P-J's.
I guess. Well, apparently it is or was a radio station. Probably some internet-based venture. You know about those. So they're in fourth place. We, of course, the Emerson News Network. Oh, it's so...
They are very close behind us, though.
I got to tell you, it is so tempting. It is taking every ounce of my latent and fallen Catholic guilt and my willpower to not just send taunting emails to everybody below us. The Striking Divas. How can we be behind somebody called the Striking Divas?
I know.
I don't even know who this is. I'm looking at the names. I don't even recognize any of these people. I don't even know who they are. I don't know if it's just like some... Is it just like some suburban women's sewing circle or like some cross-stitch group or whatever it is that ladies do now? Is that...
It could be.
I just immediately and reflexively hate anybody who refers to themselves. You're not allowed to call yourself a diva. Unless you're Elton John.
That happened to me this morning. I was behind a truck in traffic that this person who like apparently loves alliteration because they had two different businesses advertised on their truck. One was like Cabinet Creations, something like that, and all your cabinet needs. And the other was, their other side is Decorating Diva.
No,
wanted to hit him with my car.
Run him off the road.
But it was a huge truck, so it would have just damaged me a lot more than it damaged them.
Keelan would like to note that the Emerson News Network team represents the wide-ranging diversity of the city of Portland. Well, there you go. See, we're a picture of our community.
That's
sir.
Right.
It
Striking
is
divas.
You can donate throughout today, all the way up until Sunday. Actually, that is at RickEmersonShow.com. RickEmersonShow.com for the Oregon because this happens all across the country. But there's the Sleep Country Foster Kids Pajama Bowl happening this Sunday, March 13th, at Big Al's in Beaverton. So right now we are currently in third place, very close to second place. Right. Here's the thing, if nothing else, I mean, even if we ended up just being schooled by everybody else on this list, if nothing else, we have to out-earn the Striking Divas.
Oh,
or
yeah.
Otherwise, it's just going to have to be like suicide
so,
all the way around.
Yeah, we need another couple $100 to...
Would you like to know who we're ahead of? We're ahead of 104.1 The Fish. We're ahead of The Brew. We're ahead of KEX. We're ahead of both Alpha broadcasting teams. We are ahead of...
Coin.
K103. We are ahead of KGW. We are ahead of both coin teams. We are ahead of Oldies 106.7. We are ahead of... Geek in the City. We
are... C100. We're beating them.
And Wild 107, which is formerly jamming or something. Crunking. Whatever it was they were. So we're ahead basically of near, I mean, really, if you look at this, like 94% of the teams. So,
well, yeah, actually, the top four teams that are on that first page, we, between the four of, you know, each of us, our teams, we're raising considerably more than most of the other teams, our individual teams.
Seriously?
So.
I should just taunt via Twitter. Oh, by the way, Cheryl would like to know that the Christians have only raised $250.
Yeah. K103, whoever they are, they've only
That's the John Tesh station.
They've raised $300.
Yeah. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's Friday. Don't forget, this is coming up Sunday, March 13th at Big Al's in Beaverton. In just a few minutes, we'll talk to Mr. Big Jim Willig with another installment of Humor Week Comedy 101. We have to do this thing. This is like when Sheen got on Twitter and we were just refreshing to look at his followers. We have to resist the urge just to refresh this page constantly to see where we are in terms of ranking.
The team leader for Oldies 106.7, by the way, which has only raised $250, their team leader is Rick Taylor.
Really?
Yeah.
That is that's Rick Bubba Taylor. That is Rick Bubba Taylor, with whom I worked over at CBS and then at Alpha for a bit. Rick's a good guy. He's a Portland mainstay. That won't stop us from crushing him into so much Taylorian powder. But I mean, let's see. He says we are we need $125 to overtake team number two. That's the whatever they are, the striking divas. John messages in and says, I need to make my business donation. How much do we need for second place? Well, that is $125. So as of now, John, I extend my thanks and the thanks of everybody at the Emerson News Network, everybody on the team, and children everywhere, the world over.
That's true. It is for the kids.
Yes. Tugging at my pant leg as though I were some sort of leper-healing Christ. We thank you for your donation and for everybody's donations as we get through today. We need $125. To overtake the striking divas. And by the way, here's the thing. We should be total poor sports about it. We should just be the worst sports on earth. Every time we pass somebody, we should immediately just Twitter them. Just post something horrible and malicious and point it at them on Twitter. And just the most horrible, loathsome insults at them and their family, their
striking
friends.
Striking divas.
You are useless human beings.
Shut your whore mouth, striking divas.
You're not good for anything. You're not good at anything. Why
just don't kill yourselves. Why are you even alive?
Nobody would even notice if you were gone. It's so tempting. Just to be a complete disproportionate jackass about it. We are gods.
Winning.
We should create a losing hashtag for them. And they just put a striking divas hashtag losing. I'm totally going to do that. I don't even know who they are, is the thing.
No, we don't know.
What do we think? Is that too much? Do I dare do that?
Why not?
Do I dare put a striking divas hashtag losing?
You know what's going to be? It's going to be because remember last year there was this really sweet group of little middle-aged ladies who were all dressed in pink. And they were the ones who won or something. Yeah. It's probably them. And we'll just be horrible to
them. It'll be librarians. it'll just be a bunch of kindly older women who are just there to make a difference on God's green earth.
I'm gonna Google and see if I can.
By the way, we are now, and then I swear to God, we'll get to some actual news and stuff here, because otherwise we're going to turn into a PBS show. So we'll revisit this here a little bit later on in the show. But we are now at $1,210. Okay, so we have a little bit of an update here. Hold on a second. We have an update. We are at 1,200 and... No, I'm sorry. Breaking news again. Hold on, Dawn, we have breaking news.
Breaking news!
The Emerson News Network Sleep Country Pajama Bowl team is now at... $1,410. That is $1,410. Good enough for second place as of now. We are now in second place.
By the way,
$1,410.
By the way, I'm not sure if it's the same person. But, oh, wait, is it? Yeah, there's this. I searched for the name of one of the striking divas and came up with a mention of a woman named Peggy Hayes, who is a member of Vancouver's Department of Children and Family Services.
Oh, well, now they have to go down.
And she runs a charity called Bridge the Gap that helps foster children. They provide school pictures and birthday parties and field trips for foster children.
We should totally go over and just kick over their table when we go to Big Al's. We should just throw everything on the table onto the floor, just slide it off, and then just give them kind of a booyah. That's right. And then say, and then say, I'm Aaron Duran, nephew. Can I just tell you?
My name's Marconi. Don't forget it.
Good times. All right, we are now at $1,410. That is $1,410.
Woo-hoo!
Well, thank you to everybody who is donating. We will continue to update you throughout today's program. At the news desk, it's
and
Dawn
now,
Taylor.
From the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
And by the way, keep those coming in because every $5 or $10 makes a difference at this point. We don't want the striking divas to overtake us again because then we'll have to kick their well-meaning charity running butts. Okay. The impact of the 8.9 magnitude earthquake in Japan has reached the U.S. mainland. Tsunami warnings closed beaches along the California coastline. Journalist Scott Carpenter told CNN the initial damage from the waves isn't the only concern.
What cut is this?
This is Quick 3.
I'm sorry, that's right.
It's not just like a little wave that splashes. This keeps coming at you then washes out. The damage occurs not only when the wave hits. The damage also occurs as the water is going back out. It's sweeping. It's sweeping boats. It's known to sweep homes.
Well, that's one of those things where it's, Bill Bryson talks a lot about this in A Short History of Nearly Everything, it's just people don't realize that when the water comes in, that sucks because it just, you know, it's a huge – it's basically just like waves of liquid concrete coming in. But then when it recedes – It's not like a vacuum, but it is akin to a vacuum. And then when it recedes, it just pulls everything with it because it's a liquid, but the water doesn't compress, which means that when it pulls back, that's why things get caught in it, because it doesn't compress so that it doesn't actually just pull around you; it pulls you with it because you can't. It almost becomes like one of those non-Newtonian fluids in a strange way. And so yeah, just so it wrecks you twice. Every wave basically is two waves: the wave coming in and the wave. Did you put on eyeliner during the break?
No.
Okay. It just looked as though you'd applied more makeup. Maybe you've just become more radiant as we continue to...
The excitement of the Sleep Country thing is just making me all glowy.
It's the glow of victory, Dawn.
When I shouted, shut your whore mouth, it just made me all the more attractive to you.
It really does. No, that's the key to sexiness. All right. Yes. Okay. I'm sorry. But, Earthquake.
Yeah. Carpenter says authorities are preparing for the worst.
Well, you'll note as you go along the Pacific coast, sheriff's deputies are placed at various locations. As far as preparations go in this particular area right now, it's keeping people off the beach and getting people away from their homes if they are in a low area.
Nuclear reactors in the area of Friday's earthquake in Japan have been shut down. President Obama says he's discussed the situation with Japan's prime minister.
He indicated that they are monitoring the situation
and
very closely.
Terrified.
So far, they have not seen evidence of radiation leaks.
As I said, I'm just getting a lot of these, looking at a lot of these emails still coming in from people who are just waiting through all these emails I got last night as the earthquake was going on. And here we get just a lot of people say, have you seen this thing about the nuclear reactors? What happens if an earthquake happens underneath a nuclear reactor? How does shutting it down help protect it? That's all stuff. I mean, imagine they build like the reactor so that the core is reinforced, you know, because Japan is a place that's prone to earthquakes, you know, not unlike New Zealand and not unlike, you know, areas of California or whatever. But that is one of those things, too, where you realize that there is no way you can totally earthquake-proof anything. I mean, that's because there are earthquake-proof buildings that actually just get shaken to rubble because it's like making something fireproof. I mean, it's fireproof. It's rated up to a certain temperature for a certain amount of time. And if something gets shaken at a strong enough magnitude for a long enough period of time, all the earthquake-proofing in the world isn't going to do any good. So there hasn't been anything like that happening yet. But it does. That's why I think they get unnerved, because it's like the best constructed building or nuclear power plant in the world is really no match for just the Earth deciding to move some tectonic plates around. Mm-hmm. So back on the Sleep Country thing for a second, somebody says, when you go on Sunday, you should bring your own poorly behaved, thuggish sponsor children. Children wearing bowler caps and waving switchblades in the faces of other bowlers. Okay.
We get to, like, Big Jim Willig to come with us, and he can just wear a T-shirt that says, Foster Child.
Some sort of Dickensian foster kid who's just carrying a zip gun and setting fire to things. Oh, my God. All right. Here is Dawn Taylor.
A woman turned a few heads when she walked into a rural Virginia courthouse with a tiny monkey clad in a pink and white dress tucked in her bra.
I believe you mean Minky.
Monkey. Woman brought the palm-sized marmoset to Amherst County Courthouse on Thursday for a hearing in juvenile and domestic relations court. Officials apparently didn't notice the monkey until the woman went to an office to complete some paperwork.
It was in her bra?
It was stuck in her bra. She told a local newspaper that the marmoset is 7 weeks old and requires constant attention. She told the newspaper she bought the animal in an online auction site and had its clothes specially made in West Virginia.
You can't just take it to the Build-A-Bear workshop and just let it stroll through and pick out a few things off the rack.
You think you could?
Yeah.
It's like, I'd like a little outfit for my marmoset, please. And they would say, oh, why, right this way.
I thought a marmoset was one of those things that killed cobras. That's a mongoose.
Yeah, that
I
would
guess.
Be a mongoose.
What's a muskrat?
That's like a beaver.
Like a rat kind of a thing?
Okay. Yeah.
So but a marmoset is a monkey.
Right.
Okay. Is it tiny? Well, it must be.
Yeah,
if it's in her
bra.
They're
very tiny little monkeys.
Is it like a little spider monkey or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, what state was it where we were? There was the whole thing about the guy wanting to have his service snake, his helper snake.
Oh, Washington.
Was it Washington State?
Yeah.
Okay. Because somebody asked me how that jibed with the whole business of there being service monkeys, which there are in Oregon, and I said, well, maybe it wasn't Oregon. Maybe it was in fact Washington. So it's Washington where they're going to be tightening up the regulations about what animals are allowed to help out the enfeebled. Have you thought about getting a service animal? You get the gimpy leg. You could probably get that.
I've thought about it, but
do they provide that for you to pay for it yourself?
No, you got to do it yourself.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I suppose there are organizations that will help you if you are short on funds. There are groups that you can go to that will help you get a service.
You should totally petition for some sort of a service animal.
I don't really need one.
Need schmied. You don't really need that handicapped parking space, but you use it. I mean, come on. Let's be honest. I've seen you walk. You can do it.
Oh, sure.
I mean, maybe not quickly or well, but you can do it. I mean, so,
yeah, but,
you know.
I don't know. Just taking advantage of the whole parking pass thing and actually feeding and caring for and having another damn animal in my house.
Okay. So you're feeling maybe a walk. Well, you can get your intern to do it. You, once you're in there, wash my monkey, intern. And just sort of wipe her.
Care for my monkey.
Exactly. I'll be reclining in the bungalow out back. Come see me later. Awesome. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our clown watch.
Here's your clown watch for Friday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. You should have a service clown.
No. Can I have a midget? A service midget? Would that work? Because then he could, feed himself and,
because that'd be less offensive. Okay. There is,
I like midgets.
I'm sure the midget community appreciates your support. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Two men, one wearing a clown mask, robbed a Subway store early Monday morning and left one employee injured.
Like a Subway sandwich store?
Yes.
Okay.
Two men, both 5 foot 11 inches tall and skinny in build, entered a Subway store about 6:40 a.m. A male employee, who was 23, was in the back of the store doing prep work. The employee came to the front of the store when he heard the front door open. One man wearing a hoodie struck the employee at the back of the head with a handgun and locked him in the walk-in freezer. The robber hopped over the counter with the other robber, who was wearing a clown mask. The robbers escaped with a small sum of cash. After about 10 minutes, the employee was able to let himself out of the freezer with a safety release and called 911. Police didn't have store surveillance video, but have descriptions of both robbers. You know,
they're clowns.
5'11" and thin and
rainbow hair, big floppy shoes,
clown heads,
huge red nose. He should be easy to spot. Hey, can I just tell you this? This is apropos it's not apropos of nothing. It's apropos of about 30% of the above story. You know, it's one of those things where, and you think that I would be smart enough at this point, to avoid emails that to come in where the subject line is something like, nude pictures of, and then it's like, who is that chick that you just introduced me to the other day, visually speaking?
Liz Vassy.
I keep forgetting her name.
By the way, I sent you an email. Did you get the email I sent you with the sexy picture of young Helen Mirren?
No.
Doing a sexy dance?
I think I'd remember that.
Yeah.
How young Helen Mirren?
Young, like in her 20s, and it was from some experimental film that some Danish filmmaker made in the 60s. And her just going, do you want me?
I have...
it was like creepy and sexy, but also creepy, because then you go,
It's Helen Mirren.
I have seen that actually. Your favorite guy, Mr. Skin, actually, because I had, I think probably still do, like a guest membership or whatever, like a comp membership to his site or whatever. And I remember when she was nominated for something a couple years ago, and he was just like, you know, if you wanted to see Helen Mirren, like, you know, in the All Together, sort of when she was younger, he's like, go to Mr. Skin. He had like all of the nominees for that year. If they had done nudity, he had a whole special section.
And she's never had any problem with showing herself off over the years. She's like Julianne Moore there. It's like for a while, like every third movie, you saw boobies.
I remember Julianne Moore. She was in Shortcuts, right, where she was actually not just topless but bottomless.
Yeah,
she said the whole scene where she's just like talking to Matthew Modine, and she's got an ironing board out, and it's like, you know, and the whatnot, and it's like right there, and then you're thinking like. It's not, you know, you don't want to have your iron at waist level if you're going to be bottomless. That just seems like an accident waiting to happen.
No, ironing naked is kind of like cooking naked. There's just some things that are just kind of a bad idea.
Yeah, I was. It's always a mishap with the spray starch with me.
That could have its advantages if you're never.
So some guy sent me something yesterday. It was like nude photos of Liz Vassy or whatever, and I'm like, okay. And I click on it, and of course it's not. It's like the most. It wasn't even like full on porn. It was like just like stills or something, or like in a screen capture porn. It was so disturbing, though. It was a guy dressed as. It was a guy dressed as Heath Ledger's The Joker, humping a woman who was dressed as Batman.
Oh, see.
So it was like a woman in a Batman outfit. So a woman is the Dark Knight, and she's on the ground, and then a guy dressed as Heath Ledger's The Joker is effing her. So it was like, it was so bizarre in like 170 different ways all at once, because it was like The Joker, and it's Batman, but it looks kind of gay, but then it's really not, but then it's got like a, you know, but then it's hot, but then it's horrifying, but then it was all very strange. So anyway, I have no real point there. There's your Clown Watch for Friday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Awesome. Somebody says, go ahead and flame and taunt the striking divas. I'm sure you won't need any karma for your upcoming stay at the Bates Motel in New York.
Yes, that's great.
Maybe I won't. And you're right, because it would be one of those things where it ended up being a group of those like calendar girl type women. You know, where it was like some much beloved older, you know, older ladies from the women's auxiliary or whatever. So,
well, I am pretty sure that the one woman who I looked up first apparently is the one who started the team and donated the most money. And there is a woman in Vancouver who's like with the Department of Children and Family Services.
That probably
is. Works with foster kids.
That would be.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, well. Maybe we, yeah.
Somebody is suggesting that you get a service juggalo for the, you know, for the next week or so
that
at least.
That could be interesting.
Don't forget, next week, Legion of News will be live every day with Don Taylor and a variety of co-hosts, including Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week and our own Sarah X. Dillon, shares the studio with us here at the Emerson News Network. And then as far as the Rick Emerson show goes, what we'll probably end up doing is doing a little bit of, and we got to figure out, you and I were talking about this, that we've sort of put everything off to the last possible moment.
Of course.
But we'll do, I would imagine, live stuff coupled with some best of and pre-recorded stuff every day, and then I'm going to do my best to call in from New York each day that I am able. I'm going to be traveling on, although I have this goddamn on Monday, I have this layover in Minnesota, which doesn't even seem like it's on the way to New York. I mean, I guess maybe it is, but it doesn't seem like it is. Looking at the map in my head, it seems like Oregon is over here and New York is here, and like Minnesota's up, like, I don't know, like up by like one of the poles or something.
You know, I gave you an atlas for your birthday.
Yeah, I know, but I kept it at home because I thought if it was here, it would become damaged. So you gave me a very nice, I didn't actually get a chance to talk about this because it was just, that whole day just sort of went to hell for some reason that I can't really remember. But it was an atlas from 1948, and it was a sort of atlas, but not a big sort of coffee table book atlas. It was sort of like the dimensions of an encyclopedia volume, and it was great. It totally outdated and wonderful in every way.
I'm pretty sure that Minnesota is still in the same place, though, that it was in 1948.
Yeah, but I don't know what that place is, so that doesn't help me. Also, I put the book at home because I thought if it was here, it would eventually be spilled on it at some point. So I wanted to keep it in tip-top condition. Somebody just says, it is on the way to New York. Also, you are a goddamned idiot. Thank you. Thanks so much. Appreciate that. Okay. Next week, Dante will be doing a Legion of News with a variety of co-hosts, and then she'll be doing probably part of the show live every day, and then some pre-recorded stuff, some stuff from the archives as well. Because there's stuff that I've got, you know, sort of in storage that we've just never played, and it's just sort of sitting there, and it's just one of those things. I like a lot of guys who work on the radio, and I don't know if this is true in other creative endeavors, but a lot of people who work in radio share this. It's this thing where simultaneously I am never, ever, ever bored with the sound of my own voice, as you might have noticed, and yet there is nothing more excruciating than listening back to an air check of my own show, which is a thing that every single radio person can identify with, where it's like, you know, on the one hand, I can just blather for hours without caring whether other people are actually interested in hearing it or not. I mean, regardless of the level of disinterest that may be evident in the listener, I can just sort of speak at a great velocity and speed, you know, and force about just like nothing at all for hours on end. But if you were to put me in the office with, like, you know, like when Bruce is the program director, I had to sit there for like 20 minutes and listen back to the show. It was like being lit on fire. It was being like being dipped in molten lava. So as a result, it's just incredibly painful to sit and go back through years of shows to try to pick out something that might work as a best of this week. So that's why I haven't done that yet. So one of my many neuroses on display. So we'll try to get that taken care of, for next week. But so be listening each and every day. And I'll be giving updates from New York as well. One of the things I'm going to try to do, and then we got to break here, but one of the things I'm going to try to do is, the last time I was in New York was, I guess, 2009, because it was right before the Pearl Jam concert happened, because Laura and I were in New York, and I had to do that the Pearl Jam ticket giveaway announcement like from my hotel room in New York. I had to like Skype into KUFO or something. So I guess that would have been 2009. But I did those like Rick Emerson's America things, where it's like I filmed myself in front of the Archie Bunker house, and I filmed myself in front of the house that was Henry Hill's home in Goodfellas, the young Henry Hill. And I filmed myself in front of the Apollo Theater and whatever. So I'm trying to think if there's anything really obvious I've missed in terms of pop culture landmarks. I mean, I know there's a million things in New York that have been seen on television, but I mean, sort of interesting pop culture landmarks. Like, I filmed myself in front of the Wonder Wheel at Coney Island, which has made famous in The Warriors, which was just, you know, which was pretty fantastic. I got to tell you that. Have you ever been to Coney Island?
I've never been to New York.
Man, Coney Island is one of those places that you just see all the time in films, especially like, you know, Spike Lee sets a lot of things in and around the Coney Island area, but it's so unbelievably just overwhelming to see it in real life. I mean, New York is that way in general, but Coney Island itself is one of those things that, like, you see it in the movies and then you see it in real life, and it, unlike, like, the Statue of Liberty or something, it absolutely holds up. It's just astounding. But I got my, I did a whole thing with the Wonder Wheel in the background. So I'm trying to think if there's any, like, kind of interesting but not predictable pop culture landmarks that I can sort of do a little stand up in front of, you know, while I'm in New York. So if anybody has any ideas, suggestions, anything you want me to sort of film or take a look at, or just, you know, to get an up close shot of, you just let me know. The only thing on my agenda is the apartment that they used for the high rise they used for the exterior of the different Strokes opening credits. So that's it, because that's how my brain works. We'll do this. We'll come back on the other side with Big Jim Willig and another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Close them all, Tom. She got
Listening to the Emerson News Network.
Now it's like you have to get like one free shot or something, right? Just sit here and you just, you know, come charging across the room, boot out. Big Jim Willie joining us here in the... hold on, let me adjust your microphone.
Give me one second. Hold on. Awesome.
Look,
okay.
Hello, Big Jim Willick. How are you?
I am well. How about yourself?
I am fantabulous. Don, are you going to post that photo?
Yeah, I actually, I'll email it to the thing. I also just posted on my Facebook page and Twittered it. So
it's been my Facebook.
You got like a Haystacks Calhoun thing going on today.
Thank
or
you
something.
Very much. It's, I appreciate that. That is something something special.
Where did you? Okay, so Jim is wearing his standard white T-shirt, regular shoes, but then you got the bib overalls,
Carhartt bib overalls, American style.
Please don't talk like this for
Sorry.
The rest of the day.
I apologize.
You'll have to pull out your tongue. I know you're trying to get in the character groove, but I can just feel my brain becoming rounded off. It's not even like a mullet as such, Don. How would you describe this?
It's
a wig.
It's a very mullety wig,
It's not a power mullet though.
No,
and it's strangely feminine in the front. You know what it is? It's,
really?
I hate to say this. It's like you're going as a real dog walker. You know, if we understand one another.
I don't think
a real
we do.
Subaru driver.
My.
A real aluminum siding installer.
No, I got you. I got you on the second swing. No, I found this wig at, of all places, the porn store in which I work, down the basement. It is like
implying that it's somebody's fantasy.
My fantasy is to be caught in a dark alleyway with several men in mullets.
I want somebody who looks like 1984 era Valerie Harper. But who can't talk?
Valerie's Family. Yes. It was a fantastic TV show that was. But no, I found it downstairs in a box, and I put it
you
on.
You put something on your head that you found in the basement of a porn store in a box.
See, okay, now.
Oh my God.
Let's put the brakes on that right now, because the tone or the tang in your voice is
the
such.
The tang in my voice.
It's such.
Tell me more about the tang in my voice.
It's such that you would imply that our store is just like a teeming cesspool or petri dish of just. You know, grossness. It's not.
You say tomato.
It is well cleaned and manicured and kept up. If you saw the basement of which I am speaking, you would maybe not be so
okay,
quick to judge.
But here's the thing. It wasn't like it was in a
soggy puddle somewhere. Like, I found it in a box organized and nice and neat by Holiday.
I think it has less to do with the fact that it's a porn store and more that it's the fact that it's a wig that came out of a box in the basement of a building.
Which holiday was this one filed under?
Mullet Day, obviously. It's more of a religious holiday.
If I just found something in a box in the basement of this building, I don't think I'd put it on my face or my head. That's all I'm saying. It has less to do with it being a porn store and more that it's just like, here's some stuff I found behind a water heater.
My mother wouldn't let me put on wigs that they were selling at the Goodwill, and I assumed that those had already been, like, you know, vetted for bugs.
No, I'm
my
not.
Mother was like, don't put that on your head.
I am not mentally soft, as I feel like I'm being painted with the brush of.
I'm just saying you're adventurous, more so than
Thank
myself.
Thank you. I would take that. I would take because I did inspect it thoroughly. I wasn't just like, ooh, here's something I could put on my face. You know, I wonder what these paint chips taste like. No, I took a second, I looked at it, I'm like, is that really that is a mullet wig? And then I inspected it.
Shall I put it on my head now?
You know, it was much.
Shall I compare it to a summer's day?
Thou art more lovely and more temperate. But I perused it to make sure that it wasn't like, you know, swimming with disease. And upon, you know, meeting my criteria, I'm just like, I wonder if it fits. And it, sure enough, it fits and matches my natural hair color quite,
it does.
Quite
Here's
well.
The thing is, like, strangely enough, and I'll get this posted here in a second. Strangely enough, I was not entirely unsure that it wasn't, you know, like it was like a 2-to-1 in Pick'em about whether it was your real hair or not.
It is exactly Jim's actual hair color.
It is. It's uncanny, actually.
If we didn't see him every week and know that he didn't have time to grow that since we saw him last.
Well, I thought that maybe you'd stumbled onto the cure for male pattern baldness and you were just waiting to patent it.
One part yoga, one part tantric, and then just sort of a lot of focusing.
I will say that today's discussions of Jim's hair and all subsequent matters to follow brought to you by, among other fine folks, Squires Electric. That is squireselectric.com. That's their website. Or you can find out more about them by calling 503-252-1609. That's 503-252-1609. 800-516-0009. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, supervisors, and mavens. So if you are dealing with electrical issues at your home or your business, you're going to be, in the sense that you're going to be expanding your business into a different location, or you're going to be selling somebody a different, you know, a home, you're going to be renting, whether it is you renting to someone else or whether you acquiring the rental that somebody else has put on the market, you want to make sure that you get exactly what you're paying for and that it is as advertised. You have Squires Electric come take a look at it. They give it a top to bottom and a front to back inspection, and they'll make sure that everything is as it appears and that you are not going to end up having to fix something later on. You're not going to be stuck with something that needs further modifications, which is going to be a huge pain in the ass and a waste of your time and a waste of your a waste of your precious life force. Contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. Licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors, and of course, longtime sponsors of the Rick Emerson radio program. It is SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
By the way, I did, I did post the photo of Jim. It should be available on Rick Emerson. But I also posted to Twitter and said, I have no idea why Big Jim looks like this today. And someone responded, because he's from Lancaster County.
Okay. If you want to see what...
this is the sound of me rebutting that.
If you would like to see this rather interesting photograph of... which, by the way, did you take this with one of your your iPhone app that makes it look like it's a photograph from the Carter administration?
Yes. Yes.
It's all like... Not even sepia tone. It just has that, like, it's called an Instamatic. Yeah. I'll have my photos back in just 3 weeks.
Yeah, I have one of those things where it has different filters so you can make things look like they're old, fading, like Instamatic photos or something like that, which I think is kind of cool.
I like the caption, by the way, which is just photo.
Oh, I guess I failed to actually.
Yes.
I'll
do it. Hold on.
Anyway.
Jim Willig's soul captured on film. you can see that at rickemerson.com/pictures. That is visual aids for March 11th. That is visual aids for March 11th at rickemerson.com/pictures. Do you want to? You mentioned to me earlier what the wig with the sort of getup was for. Do you want to tell everybody else, or is that a secret? Are you waiting?
I'll let you in on a little bit of it. I'm planning on, since I put the wig on, it was one of those things where you have a lot of different creative ideas, but until one kind of cog fits in perfectly, it doesn't really kind of really make sense to you. When I saw the wig, I'm just like, I can create a myriad of characters with this wig. So I'm going to be filming various videos around Portland, almost in the vein of like an anti-Portlandia. And then putting them up on the web through one manner or another. But I just wanted to share this with the world.
It really is glorious.
It's a touch of Farrah.
And here's the thing. And that's the thing, is like, it does look sort of, it looks strangely feminine all the way until like midpoint, and then and then it just becomes like every guy who was in the radio TV program with me in Kennewick, or any of the guys who came by to visit the girlfriends that they had knocked up, who the girls who were then stuck in the young parenting and cash register operation class, which is like down the hall, which I'm not making up, by the way.
Register operation.
Well, that was, we actually were talking about this last week, about my theory that in retrospect, those magnet schools for like the artistically gifted and whatever. I have come to this theory that the artistically gifted school that I was never like allowed to go to or whatever, that I was never allowed to test for, the Kennewick Opportunity for the Gifted, they called it, the COG, that is actually the same school as like the alternative school where they send like the knife fighters and the pregnant kids. That there is just one, it's one,
and
one school with
knife fighters.
Many labels, because you would hear kids who went to the alternative school and kids who went to like the gifted school come describe them, and the descriptions were exactly the same. It was like, well, they don't really, you know, they realize we probably don't work very well with structures, so it's more, you know, it's more about finding a way to teach you as an individual because they know you don't function well in the regular school system. And it's like, you know, that could be some kid with a, you know, an IQ that is like boils water, or it could just be some slut, you know, who just like, you know.
It's like the mentally infirm boys from Brazil.
Exactly.
I tell you, though, I'm looking at this and it is the hair of like the 22-year-old guy who drove a Trans Am and dated like one of my 15-year-old classmates.
Totally.
Who said, my parents aren't allowed to know about it, but we're in love.
We met at the mall.
One of those guys was like hanging out of the high school parking lot like 4 years after he graduated. So where's the party at tonight? Woohoo.
I will say this. Matthew McConaughey did speak at my graduating class. He was the valedictorian 7 years in a row.
God damn.
All right, all right, all right. Was our prom theme.
Okay. By the way, we should give a little bit of an update here. Let me see if I have a breaking news for
breaking news.
The Sleep Country. Did you ever do the Sleep Country Pajama Bowl when you were at CBS?
I did. I most certainly did. I did 2 years.
So we have we've been continuing. We've done that actually for the last 3 years in a row. Last year, I didn't even have a show. I was just sitting at home just scratching my junk, and the listeners.
Thank you for that image.
Put together the Rick Emerson scratching his junk team.
And that was the costume theme too, by the way.
It was just a big. Everybody dressed as a red inflamed area. I've come as a swollen patch of skin. But the listeners have, you know, very, very, you know, we've always said we have the best audience ever, and they've been very generous with their time, and in this case, their time and their money. And so they have put together a team for the Sleep Country Foster Kids Pajama Bowl event every year. This year is no different. We are now in second place with $1,510.
Woohoo!
So we are now at $1,510. That puts us, to the best of my knowledge, now I do not know who, spare me.
When I looked at them this morning, they had like 1,900.
They were at 15. No. I'm sorry. They are at 1,955. Yeah. So, but here's the thing: is we've raised like $650 within the last like hour.
Yeah.
So we are only 400 and some odd dollars away from defeating them, from crushing them, from shaming them, from removing their last remaining reason to exist on planet Earth, sapping their life force and then drinking it like a succulent nectar, like a mead of the gods.
Listening to the lamentations of the women,
exactly.
Watching them driven before you.
That is because, really, I mean, that is not just what's best in life. That is all that matters in life. That is really the only thing that makes this life worthwhile. So also helping children.
Time permitting, helping children.
So I don't know who they are. I don't recognize any of the names. But I will tell you this. That to the best of my knowledge, we, with the exception of Spare Me, who really, because of their name alone, deserve to just be crushed. We have now surpassed. I won't say we've beaten because the day's not over yet.
No.
We have surpassed every other broadcast outlet and entity in Portland.
By a large
by
margin.
By a substantial margin.
Nicely done.
So, most of these stations are still stuck at the $250. They had to pony up to start a team in the first
place. And that's the minimum.
Place.
Yeah, you got to pay that actually just to get in. That's to open. So anyway, so thank you to everybody who has donated so far, everybody who's kicked in. And again, you can donate any amount, small or big, doesn't really matter. You know, it's whatever you feel you can, whatever it's worth to you, just to see the rest of the teams humbled and besmirched.
Yes.
I mean, really, that's what, you know, that's what this is all about when everything is said and done.
But also just to advertise to the world at large the glory that is the Emerson News Network.
That's right. Really, it's not even about the glory that is the Emerson News Network. It's about the glory that is the audience.
I know, really is making quite a statement about how amazing and dedicated our listeners actually are, that they're kicking in this much money for this sort of thing when, you know, when coin can't come up with more than $250. I mean, come on.
Well, the camera can't quite reach its wallet. Apparently, the robotic camera there, it left the house without its money clip. It left it on the nightstand table at home. I've got this. Let's see. We got an update coming in on. Hold on a second. Somebody's sending me something or other. Something about the pajama. I'll have to find it. And this is it's just more Juggalo email. You are listening to the Rick Emerson. The Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up later on, we'll have another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 with Mr. Big Jim Willink today, talking about the life and career of one Mr. Eddie Izzard at the news desk. This is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Let's do our Taser Watch.
Here is your Taser Watch for Friday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. You got me running, going out of my mind. Awesome. Here is Don Taylor with your Taser Watch.
A man in Lakeland, Florida, who police...
I'm sorry, where?
Florida. who police say had been drinking and was trying to mow his neighbor's lawn, ended up in a violent fight with two officers.
Is that what these photos are about? I mean, they must
be. Oh, indeed they are.
Okay. These, look, I'm not saying that the photo of Jim isn't a little troubling, but this, the pictures that accompany this story, I actually did this during the break when I was going to post the photo of Jim. I went over to the gallery and I went, ah! And I kind of pulled back a little bit from the screen. I mean, I literally, I moved away a distance of, I would say, 6 inches further because I was so afraid that this guy would reach out of my computer monitor and grab my my life from me.
And let me tell you, those are actually, there was a whole slideshow of photos that I found on the web, local news crew that covered this. The man's wife took photos while this was going on, and there's like there's a number of photos.
It's deeply disturbing.
And the one that I chose, one is his mugshot and the other is just a photo.
It's an action photo.
The action photo. And that was the least disturbing of the photos. If you go to WTSP.com and find the lawn mowing neighbors thing, there are some photos on there that are really graphic and really bloody.
this texture says, Mr. Florence doesn't look good. Not good at all. You see, by going
this one, for example.
Go to Rick Emerson Show. RickEmerson.com/pictures. That is RickEmerson.com/pictures. Visual aids for March 11th, and you will see these.
Or that one, for example.
Oh, do not want.
Yeah.
Send more cops.
So it was 8 o'clock on Tuesday night when Joseph Florence, 57, decided he was fed up with the way his neighbor's lawn looked.
I love guys who are fed up. I love in any story where a guy is fed up or a guy has had enough. Those are the stories that warm my heart.
And apparently there had been some alcohol involved.
Oh, no. That's awesome.
And he decided to take matters into his own hands.
Those are also great stories where a guy takes matters into his own hands.
We can only take so much before you have to take matters into your own hands.
So he went over to his neighbor Stephen Roth's house and connected a water hose to Roth's spigot and started watering the lawn. When Roth asked Florence to leave, he refused, so Roth called 911. When the officers arrived, they found that Florence had happened between the neighbors before because Florence apparently often takes it upon himself to come over uninvited and mow the guy's lawn.
Jesus.
So officers said when they first made contact with Florence, they could immediately smell alcohol on him.
Uh-huh.
They tried to talk to Florence about the dispute, but he became aggressive and refused to calm down. He was becoming increasingly aggravated as he talked about the way his neighbor kept his yard as being a poor reflection of his property.
So had he mowed the neighbor's lawn before, or was it just like other houses in the neighborhood?
No, he had. It's a very solidly middle class neighborhood, but it's on just on the outskirts of kind of a historic district. And I guess people are very
persnickety
about their lawns. And this guy in particular, I guess he was concerned
worth doing is worth doing right on.
His neighbor wasn't. And there was a news interview with the neighbor who was saying, and he came over here and he just started to sprinkle my lawn and I didn't want him to.
God damn.
So when Officer Ivancevic tried to arrest Florence, he allegedly hit the officer in the face and tried to choke him. Officer Freeman tried to taser Florence three different times as he fought with her partner, but didn't stop him. The two continued to struggle, and Florence managed to tear the officer's radio microphone from his shirt. Both officers were injured before they could get Florence in handcuffs, and I imagine gave him another good tasing just for laughs. And the officers were treated for injuries. Florence was booked into Polk County Jail.
And
if you see his mugshot,
he was doing like an Alice Cooper impression or something here. Like he's got like full on like King Diamond eyes.
That is him after all of the blood and stuff had been cleaned up.
I want to do like a caption this photo contest with this or something because doesn't it look like he ought to be saying something strangely amusing? Also, now, forgive the question here. Is that his mouth or
Jim,
a mustache?
That's a mustache. There's the guy's mugshot.
Wow.
Yeah. See, doesn't he look like he's had a really bad day?
Yeah, those are a couple of serious black eyes.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
It's like a mime of shame.
Okay, seriously, no lie, I am going to post this on Facebook. I'm going to do like a caption this photo thing. I'm going to get that going on right now. All right. I'll use his name. There's Joseph Florence. Awesome. Okay, I'm going to put that up on Facebook here in just a moment. You're right. They probably just gave him several tasings just like because.
Yeah.
I mean, really, because it's like, you know, sometimes you use that phrase like asking for it sort of, you know, sarcastically. I think this guy actually really was just really did everything but just wear a sign just saying beat me to a pulp. He didn't get to the point of actually mowing the lawn, right? I mean, he was watering it and he was preparing to.
Where is that plug that I can plug in here for sound?
It's strange, by the way, that it's right there. It's strange that he actually was watering the lawn first, because you figure that's going to make it harder to mow. You got to water, and then the next day you mow, unless it's summertime.
Watering isn't part of like a same day water prep maneuver, because I would assume that makes the grass kind of clumpy.
That's what I'm saying.
It does more damage to your mower.
But then again, there had been like alcohol involved here. I believe we'll get to hear the actual fellow himself.
Right, let me know when it's ready. I've got it turned up here.
Okay.
All right. Go ahead.
Joe Florence takes pride in his yard and his neighborhood on the outskirts of Lakeland's historic district. He keeps his grass nicely mowed and for 27 years has volunteered, taking care of several other lawns on his street as well.
But the owners of this home told us off camera they didn't like Florence constantly mowing their lawn, so they called police on their next door neighbor.
He was mad.
As hell.
Because because I had sprinkled his yard.
Florence says Lakeland police arrived to take his side of the story.
The officer got in my face real quick. He was very...
I think the officer's baton got in your face.
He says when he'd had enough of the officer, he turned to walk back inside.
And I put my hand on the doorknob to go in, and that's when the officer, the male officer, whose name I don't know, went off on me.
And from there... things got ugly.
That's what he said.
Wow.
You come here.
He refused to calm down. They went to place him under arrest for resisting.
Officers report Florence smelled of alcohol and became violent.
At one point in the struggle, Mr. Florence ripped the microphone from Officer Ivancevich's uniform.
Officers even used a taser gun 3 times, but Florence, they say, refused to cooperate.
His behavior was definitely out of control.
But Florence says it was the officers who were out of control.
Clearly.
They just squealed on me.
This reporter is out of control.
Bloody pictures as he was taken into custody. Florence now vows
does he vow something? Hold on. Is there a vow?
Was the reporter sounds like Mean Gene Okerlund.
But Joseph Florence says it is the officers that are out of control at this summer's SummerSlam Spectacular in the cage.
2 men enter, 1 man leave.
By the way, if you go to facebook.com/RickEmerson, I have now posted Joseph Florence's mugshot for captioning purposes. So you can see that at facebook.com/RickEmerson. You can caption Joseph Florence's mugshot, which is great. I guess it's less disturbing because when I realized that's just that he's got blackened eyes. For a minute, I thought it was like, before I knew the story behind this, I thought that, by the way, your caption for these photos, it's great because the first one just says, let me mow your lawn. And then the second one where he's in a puddle of his own blood being tased and held in my cops, the caption is, let me mow your lawn with an exclamation mark. like he's escalating his request to do yard work for
let
you.
Let me mow your lawn.
Seriously. But I do minor edging as well. I thought it was like he'd smeared himself with the blood of his many victims or whatever. But it turns out he really is the victim and the blood and the smeary and the smearer all at once. And also it's just that his eyes have been like beaten into his face by cops.
That's going to be that's going to make some awkward block parties this summer, I think, in the neighborhood.
I will tell you this, though. I will tell you that I bet lawns get kept a lot neater in that neighborhood from now on. Okay, there you go. That's awesome. There's your taser watch for Friday. You got me running. Fantastic. That's wonderful.
I love that newscaster. Police officers even tased him 3 times.
And with a taser gun, he called it. A taser gun, which is, you know. And this, to revisit a common theme, this is one of those things that makes me wonder about the effectiveness of tasers, because they said that he refused to cooperate. And the whole point of the taser is that, like, the option of cooperating or not is removed from the equation. They don't really. That's when they've stopped leaving things to your own discretion. They've decided to go right to your medulla oblongata, you know, and just reason with it by tasing it. So you can see this at this is now up at rickemerson.com/pictures in the visual aids for today, or you can go to Facebook to see the mugshot. And to caption that.
Oh, we failed to mention that yesterday when we were doing our justified
Oh man, the tasing and the nuts.
A great mutual tasing.
Oh,
scene.
God, and it was. And the little exchange for that was great, too. And he goes, told me some crazy story about you tasing him in the nuts. And Marina says, I did. Nice. And then that was it. And that's all. I got to tell you that we were running behind yesterday, so we had to cut our – do you watch Justified, Jim, with Timothy Oliphant?
About the sharpshooter, Texas?
Yeah. He's a U.S. Marshal. It's a great show. It really is quite good. We had to cut our discussion short yesterday because Greg and Sarah were waiting to get in the studio, and we didn't want to run the two overtime. But I got to say that – the thing about that ending of this week's Justified is they do that thing that, like, you know, Tarantino didn't create this, but he's the guy who I think brought this kind of thing back into mainstream film and television making, where they introduce, rather than having the element of surprise, they have sort of a blunted element of surprise that they then just elongate. In other words, you're surprised when she goes, so now you get the hammer, and she takes the hammer out. And then they just don't do anything for like 90 seconds. They just sort of make you sit there and stare at the hammer.
Don't hit me with the hammer. Oh, I'm going to have to hit you with the hammer. Please don't hit me with the hammer. No, you deserve a hitting with the hammer.
And then he's doing that whole thing, I love you, Ma, you know, while she's like smashing his hands with a ball peen, you know, with a ball peen hammer. But the introducing of the weapon, and then they just make you wait a while, as opposed to just, you know, the sort of shock of just the hammer comes out of nowhere and hits the guy in the face. And that thing of like, hold your brother's hand down. And then she turns to lecture the other guy about how she really wants to be giving him the hammer, but he's already crippled, and so that would just be piling on, basically. God damn. What a the brutal, the horrible, wonderful show that is. God damn. That's Justified, which, again, everybody really ought to be watching. I'm going to try to get caught up on that Shameless show when I'm in New York next week. So that's I'm going to – because clearly I'm going to be afraid. I was going to say I'm going to be afraid to go into my hotel room. But I think by definition, I'll then be afraid to leave my hotel room as well. So I really am just going to have to keep moving like a great white shark the entire time as I'm there. I'm not even really going to
stay on the subway all the time.
Just riding out to Brighton Beach and back for 7 days.
I just can't. I realized this morning that I am only like 2 episodes away from the end of season 2 of Breaking Bad, which means I'm kind of almost done for now.
Well, then. No, there's a third season.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
So this will be the fourth season that starts.
Coming up is the fourth season.
Yeah,
you got a whole other season.
Okay.
But I didn't know you were that far into it. So you only got 2 episodes left. You're what, at episode 10 or 11?
Yeah.
It's just gotten gnarly and hairy. And I mean, it really is.
It started gnarly and hairy.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like the show begins in a real happy place. It's like, hey, you've got cancer and no insurance and your wife is pregnant. Deal meth. And I mean, and your life sucks anyway.
But just got to that just sort of heart-wrenching but just like psychologically damaging sort of place where they told Walt that his cancer's in remission.
Right.
And he actually gets angry about it.
Right.
He punches out the napkin dispenser in the bathroom because it's like he realizes, you know, this whole thing has given him a whole new perspective on his life and a whole new identity.
Right.
And now it's like, crap, now I'm not going to die.
Well, and plus he's just been burning down every aspect of his old life.
Yeah.
And he's just been, you know, he's been flushing it, thinking, well, I won't need this, you know, anymore. Who cares if I get fired from my teaching job? Who cares if I get busted by the man at some point, as long as I've got money stashed away?
Yeah.
And so he's just been burning all these bridges and now realizes that he might need them because, you know, because he might not die.
And then becomes obsessed with replacing the water heater.
And how great is John DeLancey in this season? I mean, he really is. And he's a guy that, you know, I give it up to him for not being typecast as Q, which would have been really easy because the Star Trek universe is not kind to actors who want to branch out into something else. But
he did soap operas before he was Q, right? He was like Santa Barbara and a couple
I don't
years.
Know. Maybe. I know.
That I watched.
I don't think he's actually in this season yet. I think he's going to be in the next season, in season 4.
DeLancey?
Yeah.
No. He's in season 2. I am almost certain that he's in season 2 of Breaking Bad.
Mm. Okay.
But maybe I could be wrong.
I think you're wrong because I'm not.
I power loaded the entire like first 3 seasons. But you know he did. But he's in Breaking Bad at one point, and then but he's also but he appeared. He was on The West Wing, a little recurring role in The West Wing. And so he's a guy who's actually managed to do, and he was on Sports Night. And so he's a guy who's managed to do a lot despite. You know, every time I see him, I want to go, you know, bonjour, mon capitaine. Is there a Gene Luc Picard here? You know, and I just, it's so. Plus, I do that thing of when he appears on the screen in any role, you know, even if I'm in the kitchen and I hear his voice, I just do the, damn it, Q, you know, while I'm like getting pastrami from the fridge. Stop this mad charade. Here is Don Taylor.
Oh, a Florida man, again.
I'm sorry, where?
Again, Florida. All the visitors are
big
from Florida.
Big week for Florida.
Riding a bike reportedly with a tube of drugs containing...
A tube of drugs?
Yes. It was a tube of drugs...
Like a murder of crows?
In his rectum has been charged by police. Clarell Jamar Colbert of Fort Pierce, Florida, was arrested after police found the tube of crack in his buttocks after a police dog smelled a, quote, narcotic odor coming from his rear. According to a police report, Colbert, 19, was spotted by a county sheriff's office deputy on February 18th riding his bike in the middle of the street where he was obstructing traffic. During a pat-down, Colbert pulled away when the officer got near his rear waistline. As the deputy searched him, he felt something tube-like in his behind.
Okay, no.
I guess it was not in his rectum then. It was probably
like a Pez dispenser.
It would have been between his buttocks.
Well, then what's the point of having it in a tube? Oh, I guess if it's going to slide through a credit card through a credit like a credit card through a slot, basically. It's just sticking in there. Okay.
Like a slide whistle.
A drug-sniffing dog was called in, and officers retrieved the tube. There's a good day at work.
Rough day for a canine unit.
I was just gonna, that sucks to be that dog. You know, I can't wait to go smell some more heroin. What? No, come on.
We better go to the park after this. That's all I'm saying.
Actually, this is a dog. That would be like a bonus for the dog. Dogs love sniffing butts. Are you kidding?
But human butts?
Yeah, crack-laden human butts.
It's like
crack-laden human
butts. It's like Disneyland for a dog. So the officers... whose job also was not that great that day, retrieved the tube from the guy's buttocks, which contained 12 crack cocaine rocks. Colbert was held on charges of drug possession with an intent to sell and possession of drug paraphernalia.
Jesus, God. All right. So, you know, there you go. So there's that in Florida. But here's Don Taylor.
Where am I here? Oh, President Obama thinks the desired outcome in Libya would be for Muammar Gaddafi. I can't even talk right now. Let's try this again. Can I take another run at this?
Sure.
Thank you. President Obama thinks the desired outcome in Libya would be for leader Muammar Gaddafi to step down. The president also says all options remain on the table concerning Libya.
Libya 1.
Across the board, we are slowly tightening the noose on Gaddafi. He is more and more isolated internationally, both through sanctions as well as an arms embargo.
The president says that adds that includes military options.
When it comes to U.S. military actions, whether it's a no-fly zone or other options, you've got to balance costs versus benefits. And you know, I don't take those decisions lightly.
I guess here's the thing I don't understand. Is it like I guess it's, you know, it's all well and good to weigh one's decision and decide exactly how it is you're going to move forward and how are we going to pursue, you know, instituting a more democratic regime. And he's a guy who, has engaged in acts of terrorism and said, has no plans to cease doing that. I understand that you have to weigh these things. But like, who is it that's like the pro-Libya faction in the world that we're worried about upsetting? Like, who's like a big member of the Muammar Gaddafi fan club that we don't want to irritate?
Well, he has a number of friends on Facebook that would get very angry.
I mean, it's basically just him and his nutcase kids, right? And you know who is? I saw his son last night. His name is Muammar Gaddafi's son, like son number one, whoever, who I guess is the presumed heir to the to the throne there in what loosely passes for the government of Libya. But it's weird because he kind of, speaking of Breaking Bad, he kind of looks like one of those twins that gets sent up from Mexico City or wherever with the axes.
Oh yeah,
he kind of looks like that, or CNN financial correspondent Ali Velshi, one of the two. But he was, and he has that thing of the strange, like strangely cultured, almost like half British accent because I think he was schooled abroad, which always makes. And here's the thing: whenever you get a guy who just he's just sitting there and he's covered in medals that he obviously didn't win, things that he's just like had a, like you get the feeling that there is just some entire an entire building of sewing machines and indentured servants going around the clock just making new medals for Muammar Gaddafi to wear and just badges and patches and just ribbons of accomplishment that mean like nothing at all. But you see a guy like that, and then he opens his mouth, and out comes like a Bond villain accent, and it's just like the strangest combination.
If you had seen the 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T, I could make a joke right now about Hans Conried and his Domido duds, but you haven't seen that movie yet, so you wouldn't know what I was talking about.
You could make the joke, and then it'll be funny to me later.
Yeah, and it'll be funny to people who are listening right now going, Hans Conried, Domido duds.
It'll be like packing a lunch for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay, or not. All right, let's do one more here, and then we'll take a small break, come back with Humor Meet Comedy 101 on the other side.
Indiana police said a man was arrested for allegedly attacking his mother-in-law while she was driving a car because she complained about his belching. The Bloomington Police Department said Joseph Cunningham, 33, turned himself in Tuesday following the morning incident. Police said the 55-year-old mother of Cunningham's wife told them she was driving at about 10:45 a.m. when she began to argue with the suspect, who was seated in the back seat, about his, quote, sour belch. She said he wanted to get out of the car, but he reached forward and grabbed her neck before she could pull over. The woman says she stopped the car while her daughter, who was in the passenger seat, attempted to help her, and Cunningham exited the car, opened the driver's door, and punched his mother-in-law in the face and chest while threatening to kill her.
And this is because he had, quote, sour belches?
Yes.
I mean, maybe has anybody in this room ever had experience with somebody whose belches could actually be
yes.
You could – really? I don't think –
you can smell them? Oh, yeah.
I don't think unless you're really like up close with somebody that that's a thing that's typically you know, detectable in an olfactory sense.
Oh, no, no. I've experienced that, and particularly in a closed car.
Oral flatulence does exist, and it can be quite quite just putting out.
Can I just tell you, I saw the greatest thing the other day on the road, because it was one of those – like you knew the entire story just by one quick glance inside the car. And it was a quintessentially male phenomenon. I was on like 26 or whatever, was going to Beaverton, and there's a car pulling up, you know, or driving in the lane next to me. And you know, you just sort of look over sometimes to see who's next to you. And I look over, and there's four guys: two in the front, two in the back, and the three guys who are not driving. And I'll do this in the studio, but I'll explain it. There's the guy driving, and then the three other guys have all got the T-shirt pulled up over their nose like a little tent. And you know exactly what that's
They're
about.
They're all Cobra henchmen.
Yeah, you don't even have to ask. You just know what's taking place in that car. You know what that is. You know everything that is going on right there.
Well, I also have a feeling that if his mother-in-law, first of all, she's driving. The wife is in the passenger seat. He's in the back. Okay, that tells you something about, like, the arrangement,
the
power dynamic to begin with. And if he got that enraged over her just bitching at him about burping, it was the straw.
Yeah.
It was the straw that broke the camel's overly piled up back.
Thinking
really.
Nerve strike.
It
yes.
was finally just like, I will kill you! And, yeah, that's about more than just the burp.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We'll do this. We'll come back on the other side with another installment of Humor Comedy 101 with Mr. Big Jim Willig. Also, clue number 5 for this week's Name That Snack Contest. That is clue number 5. That's coming your way here in just a skosh. And we'll have more news as well, including, wait, we've done the clown watch. We've done the tape. So we're watched out. Watch is done. Taken care of.
We are all caught up on news and everything.
Awesome. Fantastic. So we got all that. Stay there. The Rick Emerson Show returns momentarily. Go nowhere. It is Friday, March 11th, 2011. Back after this.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Take it no more. Girl, I
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Well, I'm a wasted rock ranger. I live a life of danger. On the road to find a higher high. I don't need no one's affection. All I need is my injection. Out of two, Les Paul will get me by. I've been doing gigs since I was 10. Quaaludes with the evening roast, assorted snorts of powder in between. I don't think the days gone by that I wasn't drunk or high. It's the only way I keep my sanity. From Kegger's Den to Hootersville, my flaming drinks have topped the bill. A thousand empty bottles earn my name. Endless strains of one-night stands, sharing stage with half-assed bands, and all the wife of family, true security. But I left that shit behind. All that heavy metal grind. This rock and roll is in my blood to stay, among other things. Hey, you're a wasted rock ranger. You'll live a life of danger. Sing this song and follow it till the end. When you reach number one, you can't overdose for fun and go and visit Jimmy and his friends.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. Don't forget, this coming Sunday, a couple two things, as my dad would say. 11 a.m. Sunday, March 13th at Big Al's in Beaverton. We're going to be doing the Sleep Country Foster Kids Pajama Bowl. The Emerson News Network team currently second place with $1,510, which is just a couple hundred dollars out of first place. Where the strike that. What are they called?
Striking Divas?
No, they've been vanquished. They've gone long time.
Yeah.
Strike a match? What the hell?
Bowling. Pinheads? No.
What the hell is the number one team called? Well, now it's gonna bug me. But we are in second place right now behind some group of guys. A couple hundred bucks out of first place, though, so if you get a chance, donate whatever it is you feel you can afford. You can do that. It goes to a good cause, helping foster children in Portland and in the Northwest. So that's rickemersonshow.com. You can find out more details.
Spare Me is the number one team.
Okay.
Who have $1,955.
Which just seems shameful. I mean, it really just seems like an indictment of our entire society, our entire way of life.
One of their team members gave $1,100 of that.
Yeah, see, that's
weak sauce.
So we have actually team member.
We have actually raised more money than they have.
It's like Phil Knight's team.
That's if they have a ringer. I mean, that's really what it is. They've just, they've just brought in
a team of bankers will be bowling at Big Al's.
Doesn't seem right, Don. It seems un-American. It seems.
So we know who we hate.
That's right.
Nancy Stanley. Of Spare Me.
Send Joe Florence over there with a lawnmower. Just wreck some shop.
So if you want to donate, you can find out more at rickeversonshow.com. Also, this coming Sunday morning on Cable Channel 3, that is Cable Channel 3, Northwest 32, Portland's CW affiliate, this week's Outlook Portland with our good friend Bill Carter, author of Fools Rush In and the creator of the film Miss Sarajevo, and now the author of Red Summer, which chronicles his four summers working in an Alaskan fishing village. He was in the studio with us a few weeks ago, and just a great guy and just the fantastic author. And really, if you have not read Fools Rush In or Red Summer, I strongly encourage you to do so. And I won't say that he is uncomfortable with the Deadliest Catch comparison. It's probably one of those things that that he's just gotten used to. But it's they're related, but not the same thing. I mean, the Deadliest Catch certainly is. I mean, it's a show that does seem very realistic and probably does give an accurate portrayal of that life to a large degree. Red Summer does. It does all of that stuff. It focuses on all the things that the show focuses on in terms of the actual dangers and the risks posed by going out and being in the midst of the actual catch, but also just the lifestyle and the culture and what it's like the rest of the year and what it's like to spend year after year and decade after decade in one of those Alaskan fishing villages. So really, it's a fantastic book. It's Red Summer. He's going to be on this Sunday's Outlook Portland. It's at 6:30 Sunday morning on Northwest 32, which is Cable Channel 3, or on the YouTube at OutlookPortland.com. It is time, ladies and gentlemen, for another exciting installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 with Mr. Big Jim Willig.
Thank you very much, Mr. Emerson. Now, to be funny, you first have to be smart. Not to say that lowbrow humor doesn't have its place. There's only so much one can say about the entertaining complexity of flatulence or whether or not someone might be a redneck. A good comedian should make you think. Comedy is, after all, by nature, misdirection. And the death of comedy is predictability. Now, if you knew that you would have a pie thrown in your face upon entering the room, you would simply just not go in that room, leaving the Three Stooges confused and alone. A comedic entertainer should challenge you. While you're bent over keeping your sides from splitting, you should also learn something about history or foreign lands or fashion. And pound for pound, you will find no better professor than one Eddie Izzard. Now, if you watch any of Eddie's stand-up specials, you will be informed on all manner of important things. Things like getting along with other people.
But there are other mass murderers got away with it. Stalin killed many millions, died in his bed. Well done there. Pol Pot killed 1.7 million Cambodians, died under house arrest, age 72. Well done indeed. And the reason we let them get away with it is because they killed their own people. And we're sort of fine with that. Now help yourself, you know. We've been trying to kill you for ages, so you kill your own people. Well, no. Seems to be. Hitler killed people next door. Oh, stupid man.
Also, learning a foreign language.
School, the first page I ever learned in French was full of things which are difficult to get into a conversation. Things like the mouse is underneath the table, la souris est en-dessous de la table. Just slip that in when you're buying a ticket to Paris. Le train à Paris, oui. C'est ici, c'est maintenant, c'est 5 minutes. La souris est en dessous de la table. The other line was, the cat is on the chair, le chat est sur la chaise, slightly more easy to fit in, and the monkey is on the branch, le singe est sur la branche. Very difficult to get into a conversation. Not a lot of jungle in France. Monkeys, thin on the ground. Thin in the air. Just generally pretty trim. And...
of course, religion.
Bunny rabbits, where do they come into the crucifixion? There were no bunny rabbits up on the hill going, hey, what, are you going to put these crosses in our barns? We live below this hill, all right? Bunny rabbits offer shagging, eggs offer fertility. It's a festival... it's the spring festival. Christmas time, you know, Jesus born to a big jolly guy in a red jacket. Ho, ho, ho. Ho, 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 baby Jesus. And what would you like for Christmas? Peace on earth and goodwill towards men. Well, what about a clockwork train? Oh, yes, much better. Forget peace on earth. I don't care.
And to sit in the presence of Mr. Izzard is to be intellectually nourished.
The Flying Church of England, cake or death?
And with that, I turn the spotlight on the two other people in the studio with me at this time. In the role of James Mason, we have Mr. Rick Emerson, and doing his perfect Don Taylor impersonation, Sir Sean Connery. Your thoughts on Eddie Izzard?
Don Taylor in the back.
Nice.
My first introduction to Eddie Izzard was the Dress to Kill concert on
DVD. Yeah.
And that was just amazing because it is not only hilarious, it is a brilliant history lesson. He's so smart, and he makes the smart so very, very, very funny. And then you add to that the fact that he is an unapologetic transvestite.
Executive
transvestite, action transvestite.
An action, running, jumping, climbing
We're
trees.
Such retards.
Putting on makeup when you're up there.
And he is one of those fellows that the things that he does are so funny and so memorable that they stick with you. It's, I cannot serve up cake to anyone without saying cake or death. Cake or death. You have to say. There's a whole bit he does about, yes, being the transvestite up in the tree, putting up makeup up in the tree, and then hiding the makeup in the tree, and a squirrel coming along and finding the... And the end of which was just this little throwaway thing where is it the squirrel doing something like what? Yeah, I don't even remember what the squirrel exactly was saying, but he spoke...
Did I leave the gas on?
Yeah, and then there's this pause, and he says... He seemed to say.
Yeah.
And that has become another thing with my husband and I, that whenever we're like quoting something that we think the dog said or something, it always ends up with that pause then. He seemed to say. And so he has that amazing way that the best comedians do of just burning things into your brain.
But for me, it's the the thing that has just become one of my many little verbal tics, which is the this is all true. Which he says at the end of something or other, and again, it's a non sequitur; it has nothing to do with anything. That the other Izzardism, which has found its way into the vocabulary of a lot of people, is that he'll describe some long series of events and then just go, like you do. Which is, which again, that is more about, I think that's almost a better testament to him than any of his so-called jokes, because there's nothing inherently funny. Like, if you were to look at that on paper, it's just there. It's just words. It's barely even a sentence. But there is something inherently funny about the way he positions it and where he uses it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that thing about, it's not even just the words. There's that old joke about, James Joyce would, write a page of, get a page written. You go, but, I got a page, written. I got 75 words done today, but they're all in the wrong order. And it's the thing about knowing where that sentence, the like you do or the he seemed to say. I mean, if you pick that up and put it somewhere else in the act, it probably wouldn't work as well. He understands, because he has his own internal sort of fractured rhythm, where that stuff goes and how it works as a form of sentence length punctuation almost. He does a lot of what I think of as verbal ellipses, because that's kind of what that is. That is that sentence right there that he seemed to say is a bridging sentence that almost acts as a kind of punctuation. It's not elaborating upon the thought in any real meaningful way. It's not transitioning to the next joke. It's not setting anything else up, and it's not even really a callback to anything.
Yeah, it's not a catchphrase. It's not a get her done.
It's just there as sort of a, yeah. But where most of it would just go, so what was I saying? He just drops in the whole, like you do.
Yeah, that's a loading, please wait.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Kind of a thing.
But which is the other thing he does, and we've talked about Newhart having the stammer. The loading, please wait thing that Izzard does is he does the ya-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, which he does all the time. I've got racked up, and we may play this when we go to when we end the show today. I've got the his what many people could really consider just his masterwork, his Stairway to Heaven, which is his Engelbert Humperdinck routine, which we may sort of end the show with because it's freaking awesome. But
well, I also wonder how many people have watched the video on YouTube where someone used the Lego animation software to do a little animation of his bit about Darth Vader in the Death Star's cafeteria.
Right.
And then they don't even know who Eddie Izzard is and have never listened to any of his other stuff. So,
Have you guys seen him live?
No,
unfortunately.
It really is. It's an amazing thing to see because he did two shows back-to-back when he did the Circle tour a couple years ago. He came to, I guess it was the Keller or the Schnitzer or something, but he did two shows back-to-back in Portland. And it was interesting to see him both nights because there's always that thing you wonder, well, we've talked about this with Carlin and with Newhart to some degree, where there's this sort of feigned spontaneity where what seems like a pause or seems like he's trying to find his rhythm again is really just built into the script in a sort of memetium kind of rhythm that he uses. With Izzard, it is much more free form. He seems to be legitimately, I hate to say ad-libbing, because ad-libbing or improv, I hate those words because they're such loaded terms. Improving just makes you think of some talentless dick in Los Angeles who's like running around picking up a chair with a bunch of other hyperactive guys on stage and going like, you know, ooh, now I'm flying Islamabad Airlines, you know, we're blowing up, you know, and you're just going like, what's going on here? Why did I pay $4 to see this guy who wants to be in the Groundlings? Izzard, though, does the best kind of improv. Because the thing about, not to pick on improv people, but the thing about improv is that, at least from what I have seen in my experience, both as an audience member and knowing a lot of people who work in that world, the thing about so-called improv comedy is it's really not improv. There's just a bunch of set pieces that comics have that sort of mix and match together like refrigerator magnet poetry. They've just got a bunch of things in a bag like Lego pieces that really only fit together in so many ways, even if they just have to jam them together with a ball peen hammer and super glue. And so when you see improv, they've got just sort of some stock situations and scenarios and juxtapositions that they go with.
And they're just kind of waiting to drop them
in. Which is fine. You know, it's like everybody does that to some degree. Izzard, though, having seen him do the same show, back-to-back shows on the same tour, which means he is theoretically working out material for an eventual special or an album, the shows were drastically different night, you know, back-to-back and night-to-night. I mean, there were a few set pieces that he went to every time. He had a thing about the, you know, costuming for superheroes versus supervillains or something. He did that both, but it didn't even... But the only thing that was the same was the sort of premise of it.
Yeah.
It was the hook. The actual execution of it was different in terms of setup and in terms of payoff. Because the other thing that Eddie Izzard doesn't really do is he doesn't do punchlines. I mean, if he does punchlines, they are almost inadvertent.
Yeah.
In that it is something like, you know, like you do. You know, or it's, you know, it, even with the thing about the, you know, the sur la table thing, is that stuff is not set up like a traditional, it's not like a, you know, a Hanny Youngman sort of a 1-2 set him up, knock him down dynamic the way that most comedians do. It is, in a way, if you look at Eddie Izzard, his comedy and his stand-up almost shouldn't work. I mean, it's one of those things where scientists go like, the bumblebee can fly, but we don't know how. It seems impossible. Eddie Izzard's stand-up shouldn't work because he does just seem to riff and freestyle on many sections of it. And again, a lot of the things that are funny that we laugh at that I acknowledge to be funny shouldn't be funny because there's nothing really funny being said. And it's not like he's doing them in a kooky voice. He's not saying them as a character. He's wearing a dress, but so what? It's funny for reasons that are completely intangible and non-quantifiable sometimes, which is what makes it even more impressive that it does work so fluidly. I would also say about Eddie Izzard, the thing about it is that he is the only one that could really do his material. The fact that we sort of, you know, that we've incorporated some of his riffs and phrases notwithstanding, nobody's ever going to confuse us with Eddie Izzard. If you took his same material and you gave it to, you know, you just said, hey, Carlos Mencia, bad example. but you know, whatever, you just picked a comedian, you said, hey, here's some Eddie Izzard material that has never seen the light of day. Go out and perform it as your own, you know, again, bad example. But you know, if you just gave that material to somebody else and put them on a crowd, it wouldn't work. It only works with Izzard.
Yeah, I was going to say, the only way that one can do Eddie Izzard's stuff is as Eddie does it.
Yeah.
You know, it's the only way it's going to physically work. Like, if you try to do it, say, like a Dane Cook or another bad example, but as any other comic, like you said, it just would kind of fail to reach that level of impression, of impact, that way that Eddie can kind of hit you with
it. It's like hearing somebody else do a Meatloaf song.
Yeah.
Where you just realize, well, this is a great song, I guess, in terms of composition and construction, but it is clearly meant for this one performer's idiosyncratic style.
Yeah.
And he's the best example of a comedian who is almost the sum total of his idiosyncrasies.
He's actually a a pretty good actor, although he hasn't really had a lot of opportunity. Velvet Goldmine. He was in a movie called Shadow of the Vampire.
Right.
That was about Max Schreck and the making of Nosferatu, and he was very good in that. And I wanted to play this, if I can. This is from, there's a very, very, was a very, very funny claymation animated British cartoon called Rex the Runt. And it was these cartoon dogs, basically. And in one of them, they for reasons that are best left unexplained, they were flying around in a helicopter. And they crash on an island where they are awakened by a fellow with a giant Easter Island head. And let me play this for you.
Oh, here. Son.
Engage.
It's awful when you have a headache, isn't it? I get dreadful ones, all down one side. Tunnel vision. Floaters. Have to lie down in a darkened room. Frightful. I always carry aspirin. Take these, little fella.
Cool, thanks ever so much.
If you don't catch it in time, it can move all around your head and down. Ooh, all down your middle and up your back. Now you should lie down for a bit, old chap. These dogs with you?
Oh, yes. I'm Rex, by the way.
We've got names as well, you know.
What a funny-looking pair. What a stupid bow. Ooh, look at her lard-arsed friend.
Fine.
Not to mention the one with the teeth. Listen, Rex, I'd like you to meet my travelling companions. This is my brother-in-law, Damien.
Hello.
This is Rick, an old school friend of mine who's just...
They're all Easter Island heads.
He's been up Everest, you know. Big pipe smoker.
Pleased to meet you. So,
that's awesome.
He's been up Everest. Big pipe smoker.
There's a fantastic documentary done, if you ever want like the full... Izzard kind of treatment. It's called Eddie Izzard Believe.
Right.
And it starts from the very, very beginning, and it talks about him struggling desperately to get in at various festivals all throughout Edinburgh and neighboring lands, so to speak. And it's really incredible because all different manner of other celebrities like Hugh Laurie, and his improv group. I mean, you see him, you think of you only think of him as like House or maybe a few other like serious dramatic roles. He got his start doing comedy improv as well with like some other heavy hitters from England. So
yeah, he went to college with Emma Thompson and Stephen Fry, of course. So
yeah, I the first time I saw The Dress to Kill was at my sister's house down in like Newport News, Virginia, and it was like, it started on HBO at like 2 a.m. and I stayed up until it was over with, and I laughed my fool head off. And he did like 2 or 3 encores, and they were all in like French, and I didn't understand a word he was saying. And it was the same material that he had just done, and I was still laughing as hard as I had the first time I heard it.
He actually does. You know what's weird is if you get the Dress to Kill DVD, he actually there's a commentary track for it, which is strange.
Because
you don't think of a stand-up act as having commentary. There's also, and there is a audio version that you can get the record of Dress to Kill, which is interesting because it's a different night's performance of some of the same material. So you can hear the way that it sort of changes. The thing about Dress to Kill is that Dress to Kill, for years, I think, and maybe to some degree it still is the case, but for years it was a thing that people would tell other people about because everybody, it was that sense that like you were the only one who'd ever seen it in the best way, that you're like, I saw the most amazing thing that I think they accidentally aired on HBO last night.
That's how I heard about it. My sister-in-law, we were at my sister-in-law's house, and they went, oh my God, and this thing, and it was so funny.
Yeah.
And then when we finally got it was on cable, and Patrick and I said, oh, this is that special that your sister was talking about. We started watching and went, oh my God, this is hilarious.
And it was, people would proselytize about it because it was a thing that was so far removed from regular comedy mainstream, and again, that you didn't, especially when Dress to Kill came out, which is not that long ago, it was like 99 or something, that he didn't really have much mainstream traction in America, you know, in the States at least. People hadn't really heard of him. He didn't have much buzz. He hadn't done any acting here. And so it was a thing that you only heard about because some guy whose opinion, you know, you trusted said, you gotta watch this. My friend Trey was like that. He did with Dress to Kill what I did with the book Youth and Revolt for a while, which is that for like some holiday, like Christmas, I think, he gave Dress to Kill to everyone for Christmas. And he's, you know, and they're like, what's this? And he's like, trust me, like, you will thank me for this. You will thank me for giving you this DVD. It's the best thing you own, and you don't even know it yet. So it really is. And the thing about Izzard is that he went into comedy as like a fallback because he wanted to act, and he just couldn't get any traction as a traditional actor. And so he was like, well, like, you know, he talks about it in these interviews as just almost as like for lack of anything better to do. Like, well, I guess I can make people laugh inexplicably. I guess I'll tell jokes. And so he just went on stage, and which explains a lot about him in the sense that when you see Eddie Izzard doing stand-up, whether you're watching him live or you're seeing him do one of these specials, you don't think of him as being a stand-up comic. He, like, exists on planet Izzard. You know, Planet Eddie, that is all, because you don't really, you can't imagine him like, you can't imagine him just like playing like Bob's Chuckle Hut, you know, in Cincinnati, you know, between like, you know, between like your Carlos Mencia and your some other local guy who's going to be on there. You don't think of him as being a stand-up comic in that world.
Yeah.
He really is on his own planet. I mean, imagine just if you went to some open mic night. You know, it's just a comedy store or something. And there's, you know, there's like, you know, it's your local, you know, it's sort of the, you know, it's a kind of animal night, whether to let anybody up on stage or whether you get the local heavyweights or the local heavy hitters or whatever. And you just mentally insert Eddie Izzard into the lineup of any local comedy club. And I'm not even saying he's better. I'm just saying he's different. You can't imagine him being one of those guys who is on the road the way a traditional comedian is, because he just seems like he is from a different planet altogether. So if anybody, if you have somehow lived this long on Earth and you have not seen anything that Eddie has done, you've not, you haven't witnessed his stand-up, the best place to start is Dress to Kill. That is D-R-E-S-S, Dress to Kill. That really is, I mean, I'm not going to say it's the best thing he's done, but it's one of the high watermarks of his comedy, and it's the first thing that most people start with. And it is really just worth its weight in gold. It's one of the funniest things, pound for pound, I have ever seen in my life. I would say that, really, he is probably, this is just in my estimation, he is probably the funniest man on Earth at the moment.
I think the biggest compliment that he ever got was when he hosted something called Python Land back in 99, and it was like a 20 or 30 year celebration of everything Python. And him being the master of ceremonies during the course of that, John Cleese actually said during that that Eddie was the lost Python, and I think that's like that's huge.
That's as good as it gets there. So anyway, Eddie Izzard is just a freaking genius. He really is. So awesome, excellent, well done, Jim Willing.
Thank you, sir.
As we mentioned, so I'm going to be gone next week. Don Taylor will be doing a Legion of News with a variety of co-hosts, and then for this show, probably a combination of live stuff and recorded stuff. I'll probably be calling in as well, and just I don't know, and just saying something or other. But so we will, as next week goes on, we will find out whether or not there's going to be a Humor Me Comedy 101. Probably, I would imagine that there will be. But next week is going to be a little bit of a hodgepodge, a little bit of a higgledy piggledy, sort of a rat-a-tat-tat kind of a thing. So that's next week. So be listening for that. Jim Willig can be found online at bigjimwillig.com. That is bigjimwillig.com. Somebody asked, do you have any shows coming up in Portland? Where can we hear more of your comedy, sir?
Nothing scheduled as of yet, but just keep checking my Facebook. It'll be up there as soon as I possibly can.
And if you're around town and you see a guy in overalls with a mullet wig,
just give him $5.
Himself doing stuff.
Come on up. Hand me cash for small children.
Here's the thing. By the way, just back on the Sleep Country Pajama Bowl fundraising effort. I don't even know if I should read this.
Read it.
Really?
Read it.
Okay. You're just doing a little Blazing Saddles thing just there. Just this urgent telegram from Rockridge that arrived last Friday.
Friday, read it.
Jenny on our Sleep Country bowling team says, I apologize for this. I'm only reading it because Dawn and Jim are making me read it. Jenny says, I wanted Geek in the City to be in the top 5, so I donated money to them.
What?
I am a good sport, she says. That's what makes her different than you and I. We are the poorest sports imaginable.
I know.
We were really, until somebody interjected that it was a bad idea and stopped us, we were planning to via Twitter, to taunt the team that we had just surpassed, the Striking Divas or whatever they were called.
Yeah.
Because somebody pointed out they were all like aged social workers or something. It was like 60-year-old women who work with foster children. And I was getting ready to do like a losing, you know, hashtag, you know, for them on Twitter, and you know.
We basically, yeah.
You don't even count as human. So that would have ended poorly.
No, that would be bad for us.
Yeah. All right.
We
could
hate them in our hearts.
Humor Bee Comedy 101 with Mr. Big Jim Willig. Let's pay a final visit to the news desk here with Dawn Taylor. Then we'll do the final clue for this week's Name That Snack contest here at the Rick Emerson radio program. I say killing time until I find. There we go.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
This is also a Taser Watch, but we don't have to play the Taser Watch thing again. A 15-year-old Georgia high school student is in custody after investigators say she became extremely violent Tuesday afternoon. Officers couldn't get her under control, so they were forced to tase her. Police say the 15-year-old girl was arguing with another student in the cafeteria. A school official broke the argument up, and then two resource officers escorted the teen to the principal's office. While heading to the principal's office, the 15-year-old girl allegedly began cursing and then hit one of the school's administrators. Police say the resource officers tried placing the teen under arrest, and that's when she began kicking and hitting them as well. To get her under control, the resource officers stunned her with a stun gun several times as their last resort.
As their last resort.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
According to a decative somebody or other with the county sheriff's office, the deputies are at these schools to ensure the safety of the students and faculty. They did what they needed to do, and unfortunately, it came down to this.
Well, I mean, the thing about it is, if you're not in front of the car, you know, where the dashboard camera can catch whatever you're doing. If you're a cop or you're just any security guard, law enforcement agent with a taser, really, it is just their word against yours. You know, so if I was a cop, that would be like my first resort, my seventh resort, all the resorts in between. You know,
you tased her just because she wouldn't go to the principal's office. Well, she started kicking and hitting.
That's what I'm saying. You
there
know?
Was some hitting.
Well, you can always just say she was on the drugs too. You know, she's on that angel dust that all the kids are on, and so I had no choice.
She was out of control with the power that a 15-year-old girl wields,
as only a 15-year-old girl can wield. Don, she had you know, she was channeling. I was going to make some sort of a joke that involved the word menses and then also the lunar cycle, and I don't really know where I was going there. There was some sort of comedy to be had by the combination of those two things, but it didn't really come together in a way that I was in the way that I was hoping. I'll revisit that at some future point. Hello, Jim Willig, how are you?
don't bring me into your basket of fail.
It's really sort of a steamer trunk of fail. Welded shut from the outside.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Eric Bloodaxe 72, and I'm not making that up, says, Dawn, hating them in our hearts is the best kind of hate. It's the kind of hate that keeps you young and vibrant.
Here's something else I wanted to share. We had been talking the other day about how Charlie Sheen had, John Cryer hadn't been saying anything in the wake of the Charlie Sheen thing, and Charlie Sheen calling him, you know, a traitor and a troll and a betrayer. Well, apparently, John Cryer was on Conan last night, and he came out and Conan asked him about Charlie Sheen calling him a turncoat, a traitor, and a troll. And he told Conan O'Brien that Sheen's words were painful to him for many reasons, not the least of which was because the fact is, I am a troll. It's not something I like to talk about, he said. My parents don't even know, although I guess they do now. He told Conan O'Brien he's been hiding his true identity all this time because there's not a lot of tolerance for people like him in Hollywood. To avoid ignorance and bullying, I've had to hide the fact I'm a troll. You have no idea how much time and money I've spent on electrolysis and hair dye and reconstructive surgery so I can look like this. He also said that he's not the only one. Paul Giamatti, Helen Mirren, and Andy Richter are also trolls as well.
I knew it.
He also said, since they were already on the topic, he wanted to take the opportunity to clear up some misconceptions about trolls. Apparently, he says, they do not drink the morning dew from buttercups and also cannot be found baking cookies in trees. He said, for the last time, we're the guys that dangle from little girls' backpacks and sit on the ends of pencils.
Excellent. See, that's it. I was wondering when you were going to see, like, when one of those guys was going to make an appearance somewhere, just to sort of, because it's like with every week that you didn't hear anything from John Cryer, then it just became like more and more. It was just putting more and more pressure on whatever his first public appearance was, you know, because the Sheen thing is like obviously not.
Yeah.
That's not going to be done anytime soon. I mean, that's going to be an ongoing bit of amusement for the rest of us. But I mean, to the detriment of those guys, the longer they stay out of the public eye, because then it becomes like this inverted pyramid of stress the first time they have to talk about it. I actually didn't even know he was going to be on the sense. I wonder, do we know what he said about? Do I actually have? Did I hand you this? We've got a little bit of Sheen news.
Oh no, you don't.
I think I don't know if I printed it out or not.
You know who I feel sorry for.
By the way, that was not really not inviting you into my basket of fail. That was like the whole thing of like me looking up from the hole to the ground above and saying, help me out of this basket of pull me up, won't you please?
I'd slap your hand away and say, no.
Pull me up onto the ground of wind, sir. there's a little bit of Sheen news here. Let me make sure that I've got the actual cuts here.
While you're leaving that, I will say that apparently Cryer ended his discussion of this by saying, I'm finally free to all the other trolls still living under the bridge. especially you younger trolls, I'm here to tell you, it gets better. Not gay better, but still sort of better.
Awesome.
Nicely done.
Los Angeles police completed a search for weapons at the home of actor Charlie Sheen. Sheen's attorney Mark Gross explains what sparked the search.
Somebody made some statement apparently to the LAPD, a reckless statement about something with Charlie and guns. They properly did their job.
Is that all it takes at this point? Is you just call the LAPD and go, Charlie Sheen, guns, blood everywhere, and then just send the SWAT team?
Well, I think what happens is that you make a call like that, and then the cops go, oh, cool, a reason to go to Charlie Sheen's house.
Maybe it'll be whores.
Yeah, because apparently, you know, they just walked in and were like going, hey, Charlie, how you doing? And he said, hey, I'm eating dinner. And they're like, great, we hear you got guns. He's like, sure, look around.
Just jerking a thumb over his shoulder. There's the gun drawer.
Yeah. Here, have a cigar. Enjoy my half-naked porn goddesses. Like, thanks, Charlie.
Remember the last time we were there? They had gift baskets. It was so rad.
I guess if you're a cop, though, and you do get a report that there's something happening at Charlie Sheen's house, I think you do have to go. Because imagine if there was then some incident that happened with guns. Imagine trying to be the cop explaining how you disregarded a call that there was violence at Charlie Sheen's house.
We just really didn't take it seriously. So, I mean,
what were the odds? Yeah. You know, so that's – yeah, you're just obliged to follow up on
all of
that.
He's got a lot of drugs to protect, you know? So, I mean, how's he going to do that? Harsh words?
We have another cut.
Gross said that nothing dangerous was found.
The thing that they took with them and they found was a few bullets and a 1800s antique gun.
Is that somebody going, woo, in the background?
The only thing that they took with them and they found was a few bullets and a 1800s antique gun.
He's at a monster truck rally and tractor pull.
Yeah, Charlie Sheen's house.
God damn.
The only thing that they took with them and they found was a few bullets. And a 1800s antique gun.
If you're not there, you better be dead or in jail. If you're in jail, break out.
You buy the whole seat. You'll only need the edge. All right, there we go. Have we left any monster truck alley cliches unused?
Are you gonna say Sunday?
You get your money's worth in the first 15 minutes. The rest is free.
The only thing that they took with them and they found was.
All right.
Awesome.
Woo! Oh, God damn. All right. Big plans for your weekend, Jim Willig?
Well, actually, yes. Tomorrow I will be attending the birthday party of one Ron Jeremy.
Really?
Yes.
Is it going to be at the sex house?
That is true. At the House Club, de la Sexin.
The Club Sesso or whatever?
Club Sesso.
I'm so jealous.
Tomorrow. Yes, that's right. Invite only. So, or members only as well. I mean, so to speak. But I'll be attending there with my female companion friend.
Now is she? Now she doesn't work at the in the adult industry. You know what I mean? She doesn't work at the porn store.
No, she.
Is she gonna be horrified?
Probably, yeah. But that's kind of why I have her there with me, is to sort of like we can work together to protect each other.
You know, the thing is, Ron Jeremy's gonna try to kiss her at some point.
Well, that's I'm gonna.
Or will in fact just kiss her in point of fact.
Are you gonna wear the mullet wig?
I'm debating. I'm thinking maybe it's a good vaginal repellent.
I think if you're making like if you're shooting little videos of yourself in this character in certain situations, Ron Jeremy's birthday party is quite.
It would stand to reason. Yeah, I think you're right. I think this might be a key spot for that. Well, I have to find out what the protocol is for.
They may frown on the filming.
The whole like letting it's like an eyes wide shut. I'm thinking kind of an
I'm not really here.
Yeah,
yeah, because Sarah and. Was it Sarah and Greg both? Sarah and Greg, I went to the opening of that when they did the grand opening thing.
Unintended.
And there was, yes. And there was, you know, and Sarah at one point I think was like taking a – she wasn't taking a photograph of anything sort of, you know, indelicate. But, I mean, it was like a picture of like Greg posing against a brick wall or something. But she took the cell phone out and was taking a picture, and immediately there was like four guys like talking into their sleeves, you know, that just came over and they like flanked her, and she had to like – and she had to make it very, very clear that she wasn't photographing any of the other patrons. She wasn't – even then they told her like in no uncertain terms, like we don't even want – don't even act
as though – the masonry work could be traced back to someone.
Yeah, like don't even – yeah, don't even make it look as though you're thinking about photographing somebody, because that's – because I guess the thing about the Club Sesso is that – and I don't have any problem with that Angel's Place. I mean, you know, I just – we kind of know the guys who run that or whatever, and you know, but they seem like nice enough folks. But I know the Club Sesso tries to set itself as they try to they're marketing themselves as an upscale version of the same kind of a scene and so forth. But
can you get like better snacks than just a bowl full of M&Ms on a card table?
And I guess you get Peter Carlin just sitting across and leering at you for great sections of the evening, depending on what night you go on. So wasn't that Carlin that was here and telling us all about that?
Was it? I don't.
Because he wrote the big piece. He wrote that whole.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That whole article about it for the Oregonian. Because I think he was there on the opening night too. Just sort of, you know, just sort of sauntering from room to room. How did you tell her that you were invited to this? And did you have to? Did you say like this is a thing I'm going to? Or did you say, baby, this is a thing we're invited to? Or how would you feel about attending? I mean, how did you position this sort of invite to Ron Jeremy's sex club birthday shindig?
Well, basically, I very gentlemanly put a term. How would you feel? How would you like to attend the birthday of Ron Jeremy? And she said, "Sure." Kind of confused and
probably not a thing she was anticipating.
As you do,
like you do. She was kind of like wondering because obviously, you know, being part comedian, people will tend to see like, oh, okay, is this a lead into a joke? Am I going to walk into something kind of like a punchline? But I said no that. The person in charge of putting it together had contacted the porn store in which I work for, so they worked the deal out so that all the employees that wanted to go could plus one attend the birthday party. And from what I understand, you get in, no other frills are included, like drinks or anything else like that. So, but when you said food, they actually have an incredible spread of buffet style food and everything else, like really nicely catered food, not like here's a here's a bag of like loose meat,
because that's what I was picturing.
Yeah, basically like jerky and basically any kind of processed.
Yeah. Although jerky would be appropriate.
Oh,
hold on, I wasn't. There we go. Awesome.
How did I miss that?
Well done. Okay. So that is it. Well, so your weekend is already more interesting than mine. So
pretty much, yeah.
Awesome. Well done, Big Jim.
We're bowling. He's going to Ron Jeremy's birthday party.
I'm bowling for children.
I'm probably going to see some conceived.
Yeah. Okay. Boy, that's an interesting. You got to wonder about that too. It's like you hear about porn stars every now and again that have to, they take a leap of absence or something because they get pregnant, and you wonder if that's a whole weird thing. Like the idea that you have the option of seeing yourself conceived, perhaps on camera. what would you do? If you were somebody with a porn actress or at the sex club or something, and like you do get pregnant, you wonder if that's a thing. If you immediately, like, at what point in the relationship do you have the
like Dirty Dancing?
Well, when do you have the conversation like with your significant other about like what are we going to say about this? Like, what would be the cover story that we give?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. I know that at the porn store, one of my coworkers became with child. And was there up until the point where she had to leave because medically she, it was getting close to that time. And I did notice kind of a cold shoulder she was receiving from some of the, not really cold shoulder, more like an uncomfortable shoulder that she was getting from guys coming up trying to get changed to go in the back because it's not something they want to be, kind of associating the two with, even though they are mutually, exclusive.
Let me ask you this. As you know, there's been a many, many weeks long project here where we're trying to find a new fetish or a new niche, mm-hmm. maybe in the porn world, maybe not, but just something that has not been, exploited or explored yet from which we can derive income. So there is a whole genre. There's like a whole thing of just pregnancy porn, which is just like pregnant chicks, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Where it's like, chicks who are obviously and heavily with child getting it on.
There's that, and there's also lactation-based.
I didn't know that. I guess I should have anticipated that. Back in the pregnancy porn thing for a second, what would be weird about that, apart from like everything, is the idea that if you were that's a thing where you could actually see yourself sort of on camera, but not really.
Yeah.
Like if your mom was a pregnant porn actress, mm-hmm. and you could just that would be your first SAG credit.
See, for me, I do my best not to judge because there's just such a menagerie of stuff out there. Where do you say you draw the line? I've officially drawn the line when it comes to that. Like if I could do away with one genre of porn, it would be the pregnancy-based porn because of the fact that you're starting that kid off. You're not even giving that kid a chance. There's such things like shooting down someone's childhood. This plane was still on the deck. Like he was asleep in his bunk when that bomb went off and just nuked any possibility he would have at a normal life. Because if somebody sees that picture and says, oh my God, that's Billy's mom. And then like, oh my God, do the math. That's Billy.
Yeah. Oh.
So, I mean, there's no chance whatsoever that kid's going to have anything remotely close to a normal life. So.
I was wondering if there's this fetish. Now, if there's porn starring pregnant chicks, let me ask you this. You just take it back a step.
Oh, God.
Is what?
Nothing. I just was worried about where you're going because I had the most horrible thought.
Now, we should almost – are you wondering if your thought's the same as mine?
I'm hoping it's not the
same.
Okay,
well, let's – no. Let's – hold on. No. Let me just – hold on. We should write these down. Let's write down our thoughts.
Okay.
And then we'll read them in turn. Hold on a second.
Okay.
This is the writing music.
I don't have a Jeopardy theme or anything handy, so I...
All right.
Okay.
Hold on a second. I got the best version of the popcorn song. It's just played on the Jew's harp. I can find that and drag it out one of these days. All right. Before we reveal this, let me just do the most awkward segue in the history of the world. E.H. Vending, the proud sponsors of this fine segment. EHVending.com is where you can find out more about them. That is EHVending.com. Just do us a favor. Just tell them it was early on in the show when we were talking about gardening. E.H. Vending can be contacted online at EHVending.com, or you can call them. It's 360-816-1853. That is the number in Vancouver. That's Josh, the owner. 360-816-1853, or James, the sales manager, 503-897-8204. And it's 503-897-8204. Their target audience is, people who are stuck in the office, or people who find themselves going long hours between meals. Maybe you and your coworkers, you and your employees, you're working in the big project. You're landing the big account, and you're just there burning the midnight oil, burning the candle at both ends, long hours at the office, putting in the work you know you can do, playing the game you know you can play, giving 110%. And you say, I myself could really go for a Slim Jim right now. And then you say, but my God, there is no Slim Jim dispensary here. What am I to do with my life? Where shall I go? How shall I live? If you had a vending machine, you could stock it pretty much with anything you want. You could just stock it with big wads of pork if you wanted to. I don't think anybody can stop you. So I'm just saying, you get a vending machine, the world is your oyster. I mean, it's not even that the world is like, it's not even that the world is your oyster. The world is an oyster filled with other oysters, each of which dispenses an edible pearl that's chocolatey.
Made of bacon.
That too. There's nothing that can't be done once you have your own vending machine. Forget about going to college and having ambitions and studying and having an education and really, moral fortitude. Having a vending machine is the key to accomplishing things in this world. Once you have a vending machine, you cannot be stopped. You are impervious and invulnerable. So you contact EH Vending at EHVending.com. Don't forget, if you are the first person to correctly identify this week's mystery snack via snack at rickemerson.com, you'll win yourself a heaping bag of consumable goodness from EH Vending once I give out this clue, which is... Which is the terrible four fingers of doom. There you go. Terrible four fingers of doom. That is this week's Name That Snack clue from EH Vending, EHVending.com. All right. So, Dawn, have you written down the fetish or kind of porn that you believe there might be an opening for, so to speak?
Well, I wrote down the one that came to mind that I was hoping wasn't what you were thinking of.
All right.
It was just something I was wondering if it actually existed, and then I hated myself for even thinking of it.
Okay, I'll give mine, and then we'll give yours, and so this is so we can confirm that we were on the same page, if indeed we do have the same answer.
Okay.
Impregnation porn.
Ah, see, mine was childbirth porn.
I don't know how that would work.
I don't either, but it's disgusting to think about.
Because...
Like, it would be like the woman would be having the baby, and then there'd be guys standing around...
I think that would actually be called child pornography.
Yeah,
is what that would be called.
That's the blurry placenta covered line.
That's a thing you'd do some time for, I would think, Don. Mine looks
true,
so much
better by
comparison.
It is an actual fully
it's a baby.
Fully formed baby at that point. So that would be
You don't want to. Yeah, we'll just burn that.
Okay, I was just thinking about the horribleness of the,
of
whole
children.
Process.
Yes.
Of childbirth and then someone finding that sexy, which is horrible.
Mine seems very tame. I was just thinking of this pregnancy porn. then there might be guys who are into impregnation porn, where it's like the hot chick getting it on, but getting it on in such a way that, in other words, you capture the act of the miracle
of life happening.
The impregnation on camera, and not in like an internal like gynocam sort of way, but just like, you know,
she says I'm ovulating, and then says, give it to me.
Or you do like a before and after thing where it's like, you know, when you get you buy the video or whatever, and it starts with her like, you know, on camera, like obviously pregnant, and saying, you know, here I am. Like, you start with the after picture. You jump, like a film.
Time-lapse photography?
Like a Chuck Palahniuk novel that always has to start at the end for some reason and then jumps back a few months.
6 months earlier.
Yeah. And then, yeah, exactly. And then, so, yeah, you go to, like, 8 months earlier, and then it's just like it's like her and Peter North, and she's just getting filled out like an application.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I'm just saying, there might be guys who are into that.
There is something kind of on that wavelength. I won't go too deeply into it, but I'll just say, for those interested, it's known as cream pie. Okay. I'll leave it right there on the floor.
Thanks so much.
Just
All right.
Back away slowly.
Okay. We should end today's program. All right.
Walk away from the wreckage, shaking our head slowly.
I'm sorry. I'm going to be Googling cream pie. Now.
Okay, you do that.
I would burn an antivirus after that, too.
At the news desk, it's Don Taylor, advanced technology magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gale, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff. Cheryl Kenakowa, I want to thank our special guest today, Mr. Big Jim Willig. Don't forget, I will be gone next week. Don Taylor will be here live every day doing Legion of News with a variety of rotating co-hosts, and then we'll almost certainly.
Sorry.
Help you?
No, really. Okay. There is,
I'm just going to do this.
Don't wait. Close.
So next week, be listening for Don Taylor to do Legion of News with a variety of co-hosts, followed by this program, which will be partially live, partially Memorex next week with Don Taylor. And I'll be calling in from New York as well. And I will also, on Wednesday, I'll be able to give you a review of Book of Mormon, the musical. So,
yay!
Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you Sunday at the Sleep Country Foster Kids Pajama Bowl that is happening at 11 a.m. in Beaverton at Big House. Until then, we thank you all for listening. After a brief interlude, we'll have an encore of the day's Legion of News episode, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program, which is made possible by a generous grant from y'all. Thank you to everybody who donated for the Sleep Country Pajama Bowl. Thank you to all of y'all who subscribed to this show and spread the word. It is Friday, March 11th, 2011, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. As always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See y'all Monday. Bye now.